Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Tyler, next week on Dynamite, people who bought tickets for Cleveland might want to check the resale market if they are in need of some like a new car or something. I might be able to get a premium price if they want to give up their seat for Jon Moxley against CM Punk, an unexpected pre-all-out title match to unify the interim title and the main world title in AEW between those two. And it's not just the unexpected announcement of that. It's also that show opening segment, just as heated and compelling as pro wrestling gets with two veterans who are tremendously popular and respected by AEW fans, just bringing it. That was amazing. And I don't know if it doubled, tripled, or quadrupled people's anticipation for that match. And it was already high going in. What a night of news. We got Kenny Omega returning. We'll get into that and how he looked and how he's portrayed and how he might have almost killed Dragon Lee later on. And more developments, too, with the women's title match being solidified and more. But, Tyler, what's your reaction to the big news tonight that in 7 days we'll be talking at this very minute on this show about the results, presumably, if everybody makes it and is healthy and it's an actual match and it's not just a tease, and I doubt that'll be the case, we'll be talking about a unified champion in AEW between Punk and Moxley.
Yeah, I was shocked. Obviously, the announced team was shocked by that, as you could tell by their reaction that they just learned that news as well. I think I need to try and procure some of those tickets, hopefully not for the cost of a new car. I was not planning on going, but I'm going to try and go now. About a two-hour drive for me, so I might try that. So selfishly, that's my first take. But secondly, it just, I'm sure we'll get – I don't know how the call queue is right now, but I'm going to assume we're going to get a lot of ideas on why this is happening. I have them. I don't know if you want to go into, theory corner here with that, but obviously there's, I don't foresee, Punk and Moxley being the main event of All Out, obviously, as I thought was after the first segment tonight. And that leads to multiple possibilities. The what I think is a red herring of Hangman Page that Punk alluded to at the top of the show for him not coming out. Kenny and company won tonight. So my mind goes one place only. And that is some sort of MJF situation, which seems kind of crazy. I know, but to not do this match as the main event of All Out, you almost have to have something like MJF coming out of nowhere and telling that story. And it doesn't need a ton of time to, you can microwave that angle if it's between him and Punk or him and Moxley, whatever it is. And I just think that's almost has to be what's going on, or else this is cool. But if you did, if Punk won or whoever wins on Wednesday, if it leads into something where it's, Cole or Hangman, or if Kenny and company lose and Kenny is put in that spot, I think all of those are downgrades, and we'll talk about Kenny tonight. But it seems like it almost has to be that, which is, as a longtime wrestling fan, if I step out of the analyst shoes, that usually sets you up big time for disappointment. So I'm trying not to do that, but I have faith in Tony Khan in moments like this for decisions like this. And, that this is leading to something even bigger, which seems crazy. So yeah, that's kind of my initial thoughts as I was trying to think what I would say here tonight. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. Hopefully some callers and you maybe can lead me in another direction, but that's where I am.
No, I mean, I think that's a distinct possibility. And it's been just completely silent, complete silence on the part of MJF and Tony Khan, no commenting me and others regarding MJF, which could be for many reasons. It could be legal advice for a legit dissolution of that relationship, or it could be we're not saying anything because we have a major angle planned. and we're committed to doing it. I would, first of all, I don't know that MJF, with all due respect to MJF, if MJF and CM Punk is a bigger match than Jon Moxley and CM Punk as of 8:20 p.m. tonight. I think that segment between Punk and Moxley was so intense, felt so real, might have gotten a little real, kind of like John Cena and The Rock got a little real, as Brian Gewirtz revealed in his book that came out this week. You know, it felt like they might have gone some places. Even Drew and Kevin Owens felt that way a little bit on Monday, that maybe a couple things were said that the other wasn't fully aware of, and they got sort of a more authentic, dynamic reaction, which seems to be something people are going for these days in pro wrestling, and I think it makes for compelling TV. I'm not sure having Punk beat Moxley and then MJF coming out and going, you know, making his case to get a title shot on 2 weeks, or actually be 10 days notice with one show to promote it. I'm not sure that's the best way to cash in the MJF situation. I might lean towards, okay, pop a rating on the August 24th Dynamite, and then, you know, 11 days later, come back with a rematch and do an angle where it's just people want to see a rematch between those two. And if MJF is an option, save that for Full Gear. I don't think Adam Cole, I know Adam Cole put a little tweet up, you know, mm-hmm. very cryptic and not worth, you know, just acknowledging stuff was going on with the title. Kenny Omega appears to be in no shape to be in a featured singles match. I think that's almost a safe no. And I don't know of any other free agent or anything that would make any sense to hotshot in. So I'm actually hey, if it's MJF and it's great television, let's bring it on. Let's talk about it and analyze it. But I'm at this point ready to settle in for two Punk Mox matches. Let's see them go at it 11 days apart.
Yeah, and could they also do, it's been quite a while. Could they do a 60-minute draw? I don't know. Watching CM Punk tonight, he seemed a little winded during the break apart.
Yep, he did.
I don't know if he could go 60 minutes, but, you know, there's got to be some sort of angle. And, you know, I have faith in the story, and I agree with you. I mean, I've totally disregarded the segment at the top of the show, which I thought was excellent as well. And I'd like also, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it more throughout with callers, but the interlude beatdown, it kind of broke the fourth wall in a positive way, I thought, of pro wrestling, where, you know, their segment's up and they come out and have another thing because they just can't handle the, you know, the hate between the two of them. And they both showed those face tendencies and not one backing away more than the other, which is rare to see. So I thought all that was done really well. And yeah, I mean, it's built to a fever pitch. I just hope that they can have a match on Wednesday that is, you know, has a finish that is compelling enough to warrant another match so quickly. And hopefully that there's not a bunch of extra stuff in there that isn't needed, distractions or turns or anything like that. That's my only, you know, slight concern, but I think these two could have two matches and it could work. But it seems like if I'm putting myself in Tony Khan's shoes, I would probably just hold off and have the one match if I'm going to do that. So that's why I just, you know, all my warning signs about that something else is going on here is where I'm at, but we'll see. I think either option is good. So I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get more into the promo exchange with Punk and Moxley and with you in a moment here. But first, let's pause early, introduce ourselves, and get right to phone calls too. We also have emails coming in on the Moxley Punk situation as expected. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, August 17th, 2022. And I am Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter. This week's newsletter just went up online for VIP members with my cover story on Triple H's, what's the headline say? I wrote it. I should know it. It's in front of me here. In print, Levesque's booking approach takes shape. Post McMahon era includes less irritants, more wrestling. My cover story is covering that topic this week. VIP members can read that in PDF or alt text format right now. And we, of course, have a paper copy that gets mailed out, and you can be among them, pwtorch.com/papercopy. If you want to look forward to going to your mailbox and get off that screen that you're reading, Greg Parks also has a feature column in this week's newsletter. on Paul Levesque with some wish lists for changes in WWE. That is who I am. I also am the host of this show and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, the Fix with Todd Martin, everything with Rich and Wade, post-pay-per-view roundtables, and I also conduct Torch Talk interviews dating back to the late 1980s with some of pro wrestling's biggest names, including The Rock, Steve Austin, Goldberg, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Vince McMahon, Eric Bischoff, on and on. Earlier today, I got to interview someone I was very excited to interview, and that is Brian Gewirtz, the 15-year veteran writer on the WWE creative team, a head writer, Vince McMahon's right-hand man for many of those years, now a big part of the Young Rock sitcom, an executive producer with that show. And we talked for over an hour about his new book that came out this week and what it's like to be a writer in WWE, his thoughts on Vince McMahon's retirement, Paul Levesque taking over, why he named his book after an article that I wrote on pro wrestling's most influential people, and more. Go VIP to hear that. pwtorch.com/goVIP. Brian Gewirtz has long been on my list of targets to interview because as his book shows, which is it's a fascinating book. He has been around so many big moments from the year 2000 to 2015, and is really tight with The Rock. We mentioned Rock at like the 67 minute mark of the interview for the first time. We got into so much other stuff. We chuckled about that. We'll probably circle back and do another interview soon and kind of pick up where we left off and hit some other topics. But that's available right now, so I wanted to sneak that plug in because I'm excited to get feedback on that, and I thought it went really well. And I encourage you to buy his book, too. Just the Rock Cena chapter and what went on between them behind the scenes, which, you know, validates a lot of my interpretation, analysis, and reporting on that at the time on this show, the Wade Keller post shows and podcasts. So check that out, order it. You can read a digital copy right away or have a book delivered. Support your indie bookstores. Don't always go to the big guys. So the other voice you hear is Tyler Sage. He is a PW Torch VIP podcaster covering Rampage every weekend and also does his old perspective reports on AW Dynamite on pwtorch.com. And you can also see him throughout the week on YouTube, the Pro Wrestling Torch YouTube channel, youtube.com/pwtorch, or just search PW Torch on YouTube. Tyler, welcome back to the co-host chair. We have so much to talk about, and I'm really glad you're on this week, and I hope you do go next week, and you can be our on-site correspondent.
Yes, so I will try that. Thank you for having me, as always. And, yeah, really good week to do this. I'm very excited to talk to the callers. And, yeah, let's do it.
For sure. I'm going to say one other thing about you or about something, but I care. It'll come back to me. Anyway, let's give out the phone numbers. We want to have a conversation here with you guys. Oh, I know what I was going to say. We have a on-site correspondent, Jason, who's in the building tonight, and he'll be calling in after the Rampage taping. So that'll be deep into the show. But I'm very much looking forward to his in-person perspective on the crowd response to Punk and Moxley and the ebb and flow of the show otherwise. The crowd reaction for that excellent Bryan Danielson, Daniel Garcia match, and the reaction to Kenny Omega, and if Dragon Lee was like, you know, taken out on a medical helicopter after that match or walked back on his own, and some notes on Rampage, and Rampage had some interesting things. We'll give you a spoiler alert for that, but a noteworthy Rampage lineup too. So that's coming up later. But you can join us. Our phone number, if you're listening to our live stream here, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on our switchboard. If you don't do that, you'll be like all the other people just calling in to listen, which is great. But if you want to be on the show, you got to push 1 to flag yourself. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. I know a lot of you don't listen live. You download the show after the fact. But if you do watch Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown live, feel free to email us during or right after the show, even if you're not listening to the live stream afterwards. That's a good way to contribute your opinions and questions and comments and still be part of the show, even if you're not one of our live stream listeners. So with all that business taken care of, let's begin our calls here. And we're going to go to Dean in Birmingham, Alabama first. Dean, you're the first caller. What are your thoughts on Dynamite?
Well, first, I really like CM Punk coming back. Don't know if he's 100% or not, but there's a lot of wrestlers a question tonight with him, Daniel Bryan, and Kenny Omega. everything that CM Punk said about Moxley is true. I even read a lot of comments in the comment section. A lot of people are laughing. A lot of people said, I don't like Punk, but I feel the same way about Moxley, saying everything's true. the fighting segment, throwing the fist and all, even the Eddie Kingston CM Punk segment looked more real, more, you know, into it. Like Moxley, I guess, doesn't really get into it. He doesn't like Punk, of course, but yeah, it was funny. CM Punk doing a snow angel, waiting on Moxley to get to the ring, and like, come on. It just seems they're still rushing segments. They can always work on that. They could, I don't know about you guys, like TV segments or commercial, but like even Ricky Dragon Steamboat, he could come down the entrance way or moment and take time with him. I would have got him after Chris Jericho did his thing, got him up there in the ring and protected Danielson along with the Dragon. But then, you know, they cut back real short segment interview. And anyway, also,
hold on, Dina. Wait. Let me pause you. I want to pause you. I'm already forgetting some of the points you brought up. I want to throw to you, Tyler, on Ricky Steamboat. By the way, this is not going to be an episode where we're probably doing a lot of critiquing of formatting. This was a newsworthy enough show, and we talk a lot about the pace and stuff. I will just say, as far as Dean's point there, I thought this was a really well-paced show. I thought it had a good mix of video packages, backstage interviews, that just stellar anchor segment at the beginning, a long, kind of gutsy long match between Bryan Danielson and Danny Garcia that led to an angle afterwards that's going to have a payoff next week that I thought was really good. And then, you know, just a major headline making a statement about the world title match next week, not to mention some developments in the six-man tournament and the women's title match being booked officially with Thunder Rosa defending against Toni Storm after a win by Toni Storm and Kenny Omega's return in that six-man match. And then an angle afterwards. I guess the only critique might be, you know, the angle afterwards might have been a step too far and maybe film that after Dynamite and then air it on Rampage and say after Dynamite went off the air. This happened. I thought it took a little bit of the focus away from other things. That would be about my only critique on the pacing and the format of the show. I also thought Ricky Steamboat was used perfectly. Show him at ringside and then have him stand up to Angelo Parker and chop him and limit it to that. I mean, Ricky Steamboat, 69 years old. I don't want him doing anything else. Physical, but I thought they put him in a good position to have a moment with Chris Jericho, playing off of what they did in the past in WWE. So I don't have a lot to critique. And even my critique of maybe the Dragon Lee angle should have been off TV. It's not a big deal. Tyler, your thoughts on what I said and what Dean said.
Yeah. So the pacing I liked as well. I think, I didn't have a stopwatch tonight, but I would bet that this probably had the least amount of wrestling in any AEW Dynamite ever. We had the long match at the with Garcia and Danielson, and then we had the long match to close the show. But there's a lot of angles, a lot of talking, and I think that was a nice change of pace. I don't know if I would always have a show this heavy in angles. Obviously, you said in a pay-per-view, but it might be a reaction to, you know, the new WWE and the bump they've gotten recently. And trying to compete with that with better stories. So yeah, I enjoyed it as well. And yeah, I think Steamboat was used properly as well. I just don't think if he got an entrance that it would be, he would get a nice cheer, but I don't think it'd be anywhere near what, you know, Kenny Omega got, Bryan Danielson got tonight, et cetera. The CM Punk, John Moxley reaction. There's just a lot more going on in the show that would have smothered him and his pop that we've gotten. So yeah, using him here was good, and I think it was appropriate for his standing in the industry as it is currently. And yeah, so I thought it was good. Now, yeah, I like the pacing of the show a lot. It was just enough of everything for me where I was not bored at any point.
Dean, sorry to cut you off, but I wanted to not lose track of what you were saying. What's another comment or question that you have for us?
Okay, two things. One, I feel like the Bucks, I mean, they're trying to turn face, but crowd's not really reacting to them. They more reacted so to Kenny Omega's return. And also, what do you think about the trios titles? Because we've talked about before, or you've talked about before, a lot of, that just pours on a lot more championship belt titles and AEW. Do you think that's good for the company?
All right, Dean, thanks. I didn't get a sense either way. Maybe we'll talk to our on-site correspondent, Jason, about what the crowd reaction was like in the building. It seemed fine for the Bucks, but I think having them turn heel and then turn face with, I feel like it was kind of a clunky storyline and sort of an out of nowhere angle with the people who turned on them disappearing after the fact. Then, you know, having a intentionally awkward dynamic with Brandon Cutler wanting to be their partner and kind of, you know, half-hearted tease that he'd be their partner that the announcers played into a little bit and appropriately so, you know, with full skepticism, but what if approach. That worked for me. I thought they hit that spot on tone-wise. But everybody was just waiting for Kenny. You know, I mean, it wasn't like a loud Kenny chant, but right when the mystery is supposed to be revealed, there's a fan in the middle, dead opposite the hard camera, holding up the Kenny Omega sign, which they cut away from immediately, as if, you know, I mean, if you're going to play to an internet audience in the way that Tony does with his booking, you can't then suddenly pretend your audience doesn't know that Kenny's coming back tonight when it was the worst kept secret out there. But they tried, and I mean, you might as well, you know, I mean, I'm glad that they didn't act like nobody's surprised, just, you know, go with it. But you know what? I thought Kenny got a nice response. But I think fans were waiting to respond to him, not the Bucks. That said, I don't think the Bucks are a red hot tag team, because I think they're booking for, you know, most of the last, you know, few years in AEW has been not great. And I'm still kind of waiting for them to just feel like they are, you know, a centerpiece act that are just all invested for, you know, a 12-week stretch straight, not just 3 weeks here and there. But nevertheless, yeah, Trios Tournament moving forward, and Kenny and the Bucks advancing. I don't know if Kenny will be medically cleared for the next match. I don't know if he was actually medically cleared for this match, and it seemed like most of the match was talking about how taped together and beat up and rusty Kenny Omega was. The announcers really felt self-conscious about that, almost drawing attention to it throughout. But he did look that way. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yes. So I would say on the Bucks, you know, tonight was all about Kenny's return, and I think the match was laid out that way to give him all the sympathy spots, and the Bucks were there to basically facilitate that. Along with Dragon Lee, he was the one taking all the offense, as you talked about, Kenny stepping on his head at one point. Yeah, so that was fine. I think the Young Bucks will always kind of morph into what they need to be. Even when they turned heel, it felt pretty forced at the beginning, I thought, and then they really elevated with their wardrobe changes and their demeanor changes. So I think they are a group that you kind of need to get in over time, and they need time to work into their new dynamics. So I think they'll do that. They've proven that many times over the years. So I'm not too worried about that. And also, you know, it's Kenny's night. When it comes to the Trios belts, you know, on many platforms here on the Torch, I've made my case that I am not a proponent of any promotion having way too many belts, as is the standard now in every company, really, except for WWE. They've not added a belt for a long time, but New Japan, AEW, even the independents bring lots of belts up, and I just think it waters down what is important to be a champion. You know, we saw it tonight with Pac, and holding a belt that I honestly couldn't remember for, you know, 2.8 seconds what he was holding. And then I did remember, and it kind of watered down why he wants to go for another belt when he's got another one. And, you know, kind of like FTR with all their belts that don't mean anything.
Tyler, I hate to interrupt you, but we don't, we don't have time for you to talk about each of the titles in AEW because it's going to take like another 40 minutes.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
But yeah.
That was a bit, not actual criticism.
Yeah.
I just want to explain myself. Yes.
Yeah, like they're going to have a trios match against Jay Lethal and, you know, and Satnam Singh and Sanjay Dutt. And it's like, okay, so these one titles don't mean anything to you, but you have all these others. It just is bad for the optics for a casual fan. And you can see tonight that the announcers were really pushing to those fans who maybe haven't been around the last, you know, they've entered in the last 10 months and don't know who Kenny Omega is and are trying to put that over. And having all these belts, I don't think helps to elevate anyone in particular in the mid-card area or the tag teams like they did in the past. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on them.
Go ahead, Tyler. No, you go ahead.
I was just saying it always feels like Tony Khan has a new belt every pay-per-view like those Owen belts thankfully didn't stick around. But there's always, like, a belt or a tournament to crescendo at a pay-per-view, and I think that probably needs to let up a little bit after All Out if I were to give Tony Khan any free advice.
I just gasped when I saw the AAA intergender titles mentioned last week. Like, I actually, this might have broken the streak, though. I know, you know, there's a six-man tournament going on, but I don't think we did get a belt on Dynamite that had not been talked about before on this show. And I don't know, you know, I'm being a little facetious, but I don't know how many weeks in a row we had a new belt being talked about, whether it's Owen or All Atlantic or All Pacific or Intergender or Trios or ROH. Or yeah, I mean, it can go on. This might have been a show where we did not have a belt that had not been previously mentioned. But I don't know. Anyway. So talk about what you thought of Kenny Omega, because I was hoping that he came out looking – you know, didn't wear a shirt, didn't have knee braces or shoulder braces, looked svelte, cut, athletic, you know, ready to move like the Kenny of old, if not better. And he seemed overly bulked up, slow, you know, missing spots, tentative. Missing spots to overstay, but well, I mean, he didn't miss. He landed with a thud, with one move and then may have, unless I misread everything, legit knocked out, Dragon Lee with the V trigger and then had some words for him afterwards that looked like some sincere apologies, when Lee was just dead weight for his finisher. So, the one winged angel. So I just, you know, you mentioned, you know, maybe people don't know who Kenny Omega is. If I watch that, I mean, I'm still wondering what the fuss is all about. I mean, if you know Kenny, you saw glimpses of it, but it just didn't feel like he should have been back yet. And it was more an issue of we need our star power back on our calendar than it was, you know, he's going to make a spectacular return, unless they're playing that up for a storyline. And I'm completely misinterpreting, you know, some of the commentary and where they were going. What was your take watching it and your thoughts now?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you had that take, because I had the exact same, and I was worried, you know. I mean, Kenny's a little bit of a sacred cow in hardcore wrestling spaces, and I thought exactly the same thing. I mean, the only thing I can think of with, Kazuchika Okada in New Japan is kind of a one-for-one to Kenny, and there was a point where he was wearing pants for a long time, and there was one big match where he took his pants off to reveal his shorts, and that was a big deal because it kind of it showed that he was, like, back into being a champion mode. And
yeah.
I do wonder if, you know, it's either, there's two options, right? The one you just laid out where he's back way too early. He's not healthy. He, you know, on the, you cannot escape flip that he does into the corner. He hit it about halfway and smiled it off and laughed it off. And, you know, he's got a huge brace and he's wearing a t-shirt. It just is not the Kenny Omega.
Well, it's
thing.
So it's either they called it a compression shirt. Made it sound even like that had a medical purpose.
Yeah. And so it's either, you know, it's real and he's back way too early and he may just be in a different phase of his career. And, you know, because if you're going to work through that, if you're not ready and you're going to work through that and work matches, you know, work 2, 3, 4 matches a month, I don't think he's going to get to the point where we saw him before. Or this is a storyline of, you know, like they talked about in commentary of the Bucks called everybody in their phone and he was the last guy to pick up. And in storyline, he's coming back too early, and maybe at the pay-per-view, he can take off his shirt and take off the brace and kind of hit more moves as he's had a couple warm-up matches up to that point and can kind of be the Kenny Omega we know, and they can, you know, he can be rocking and rolling. But I don't think that, you know, watching the Kenny Omega character up until this point, I don't think there's that much thought put into that. And I'm trying to be kind when I say that, but I would lean more towards he's back too early, and I don't know why that is. And I wonder who is to blame or not to blame for clearing him or not clearing him in that. And, you know, I'll wait and see, and I will admit if that's the wrong take. But that's my initial take here, is that it's Kenny Omega truly at like 50%. And I don't know what that does for him or for the company if he's not going to be what he could be if he's gone for another 6 months.
And that's scary given how long he's been gone, which is more than 6 months.
Yeah.
And if that's the shape he's in, you know, is that because he's got a big money contract and he's content with his career, and more than anything, maybe those that state of mind is spurned on by his body just not being able to train anymore the way it used to. And so it's, you know, I don't know. I can't get in his head, and I'm obviously not following around in his post-surgery training regimen. But he's going to be 40 years old in a few months, and he's put in. I mean, the ring style he has worked. It's one of the reasons I celebrate it a little less than others and champion it less than others, is the ring style he works shortens careers. And I think, you know, there's been some great matches, but you know, a lot of great matches, but sometimes there's a lot more in that match than is needed for it to be great. And I do worry, you know, that we are seeing the product of just working a style in your early 30s that leads to a body breaking down, you know, 5-10 years before it ought to otherwise, maybe 15 years before it ought to otherwise. But I don't want to, this isn't a writing him off completely. I mean, we've got to see more. But tonight when he's, you know, when the announcers I'd make less of it if the announcers didn't just seem self-conscious about it and draw tons of attention to it. But in a way that I like you, cannot really come up with a cogent rationalization for having Kenny Omega return and having the storyline of the match not be how great he looks, but how he doesn't look good. You know, and you know, Ross saying, you know, he at least he's still tough when he kicks out of a move. But you know, being, he said, there's a difference between ring rust and toughness. He was basically saying, yeah, he's showing ring rust, but he's still tough. Like, I don't know how many comments there was in that 21-minute match, with two commercial breaks, but about Kenny not being in shape. So I was, like I said, I was genuinely hoping that he had enough time off and he's going to come back and just have a spring in his step and look great. I'm sure he feels as bad as anybody. Oh, I shouldn't say I'm sure. I suspect he feels as bad as anybody about that. And hopefully, you know, they can figure things out. But if he needs to take 2 more years off, you know, AW's fine. You know, let him get in shape, and let him be as good as he can be. So anyway, that all said, let's give out the phone numbers again. You guys are absolutely encouraged to give us a call or push 1 to join the conversation if you have already called. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. The way to find this show is at wadekellerpostshow.com, and you can navigate to the live stream, or you can find a direct link to the show on our Twitter account at PWTorch. I tweet that out in the last few minutes usually of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. So it's an easy way to just click on that link and activate a live stream. And you can also find a link to the direct stream at the top and bottom of my TV reports at pwtorch.com every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for those big 3 primetime shows. We also, by the way, have the NXT show, which is live, and they take calls. And you can find details on that on our NXT TV report at pwtorch.com on Tuesday nights. Give us a call or email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Up next is Jay in Michigan. Jay, thanks for calling. What's in your mind about Dynamite tonight?
What's up, Wade? Thanks for having me. How you doing, Tyler?
Good.
Can you guys hear me?
How are you?
I'm good. I think this is actually the first time that I've called after a Dynamite. I consider myself to be a semi-regular watcher of AEW as a product, you know what I mean? I'm definitely a lifelong WWE fan. So with the acquisition of a lot of talent that I felt was either underused in WWE or just, you know, legendary acts like CM Punk, I've become a little more of a watcher. But tonight I felt like the show was amazing, man. You know, the intensity between Punk and Moxley and the fact that they, you know, basically made it like, well, we can't wait, you know. And I noticed Ross made a comment basically saying, like, you know, it's nice to see a promoter pretty much capitalizing or doing what makes sense. So, you know, I think it's amazing that they are going through next week. And I just thought the
Jay, I think we lost our connection to you. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Signal. Oh, yep. You just came
Hello?
Back in. Yep. Now you're back. You're out for about 5 seconds.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, I felt like, you know, to kind of piggyback a little bit off of what you guys were saying, you know, I got to believe that they're working an angle as it pertains to the Kenny Omega stuff, because he didn't look good, and I felt like they were so heavy-handed with the fact that he didn't look good that there's got to be a larger story being told here. I'm hopeful of that, and it would make a lot of sense. But, you know, all in all, man, I just thought the show was amazing, and I kind of want to see what you guys feel just as far as, like, was this a exceptional episode of Dynamite, or am I just kind of seeing it through, I guess, like, rose-colored tint?
I thought it was exceptional. I thought this is easily a top, you know, top one third. I think there are 2 out of 3 episodes of Dynamite that aren't as good as this one. I'm not ready to call it a top 10% show, but I wouldn't rule that out either. I'd have to think a little more about that. But a top one third is easy. I mean, and I don't know. I don't want to break down percentages too like precisely here, but I mean, I think it's maybe easily a top 15%, like maybe. You know, maybe 3 out of 20 are better than this, but I mean, that Punk Moxley segment was phenomenal. I really liked Danielson and Garcia. I liked the way that it was called. I thought it was a good format for a 2 out of 3 falls match. I don't know how it's going to do in the ratings. Like, I enjoyed that style. I thought it looked and felt real so much of the time, but, and I know in the end, they're trying to create a star out of Garcia, and I am all for that. I've been a fan and proponent of Garcia's upside after, you know, 1 or 2 matches seeing him. And I thought he had a tightly round but affable presence that is a certain type of charisma that you don't find with everybody and a credibility. And so I'm glad he is on course right now to be, you know, likely maybe a tag team partner with Danielson and joining Blackpool Combat Club. I think he's a great fit. I like that they had an angle and a storyline that this match was leading to, and it's part of building him up. I'm a little concerned that they haven't given him enough of a credible record where you can get away with having him out there in a 27-minute match back and forth with Danielson. Tyler pinned that to comment on. But as far as the overall show goes, I mean, we got teased with the Tony Nese match but didn't get it. That's worth a point. No, that's mean. The Varsity Blondes Gun Club match was 10 seconds. You get points for keeping Pillman Jr. Griff Garrison off my screen for more than a minute. I don't think they're a Dynamite primetime act with the depth of Dynamite's roster. And, you know, Christian did great work on the microphone, or, you know, really good work. I don't want to overuse the word great, but it was like borderline. It was really good work from Christian. Jungle Boy was not quite as unlikable as usual, although he had his moments even in this promo, which we'll get into. You had Toni Storm winning a match before getting her title shot, which made sense. And then you had a main event, which, you know, had you know, some highs and some lows. But yeah, I mean, as I just kind of scroll through it, it feels like a top 20% show.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, to me, to take the WWE angle on this, this felt very much like a Raw or SmackDown that you get, you know, 2 weeks before a SummerSlam, a Royal Rumble, or, you know, those couple episodes of TV to really build up the meat that is WrestleMania, where you have all your stars on the screen. They're all putting in, you know, maximum effort and whatever that person's maximum effort may be. But it feels, you know, where the promotion is really throwing out all the stops and really giving just the most A storyline throughout the entire show. And that's what this episode of Dynamite felt like. And it's the first time, you know, now that AEW has been wandering the desert a little bit, but, you know, Moxley this summer has buoyed it a lot. And, you know, Punk coming back, Danielson, Kenny here. I mean, it just is a huge influx of star talent that's come in, and it really makes the show feel a lot more impactful, and it makes it feel like an A-tier wrestling show with all these guys in really compelling stories and setting up future stories. I mean, Punk set up angles with Hangman and Eddie Kingston and all that stuff. I mean, he's wrestled all of them before, but just all those little things really makes the promotion feel alive and feel like things matter and the things that people say on screen matter. So yeah, I thought it was a really good show as well. I'd say upper third as well here, 50 minutes after the show ended, but I very much enjoyed it. And I like that the style change in it being a little bit more about the angles and the personal grudges as opposed to just bell to bell, which I enjoy bell to bell, but AEW can feel a little bit, you know, very focused on wrestling and not as much focused on the story long term. So I thought this week was a good diversion.
And, you know, I said last Friday, SmackDown was a perfect show in terms of the format and the pacing and the mix of wrestling, promos, video packages, storyline developments, being focused, getting the most out of what they did. And, you know, that's something that I've been, you know, critical of AEW for not being, that sometimes it just feels frenetic and sometimes desperate or insecure, or, you know, it's all about the sugar rush and worrying about your audience having a low attention span instead of just kind of having a confident stride that you know what you're doing and people are going to settle in for 2 hours and trust the show without the pace needing to be frenetic. And, you know, this was different because we had that big 203 Falls match in the middle and a really lengthy promo at the beginning. And so there were fewer things on the show just per force of those two segments eating up so much time, plus a lengthy main event. So it was really about those three things. And then even Christian Jungle Boy, you know, is fourth. But I just feel like at the end of the show, you kind of know what the show was about. And there was just enough, but not too many things happening for it to water down the major things that happened, if that makes sense. And I think sometimes AEW just adds like three or four things too many and wedges them in. And I mean, by the way, this pushed the limit. You know, I mean, they're still promoting Rampage. They're promoting a tag team title match on Rampage. And I mean, it walked right up to that line. But I think it worked. And I think this is a you know, model show for AEW, although I say that a little slowly and cautiously, because you're just not often going to get have a nearly 30-minute 2 out of 3 falls match and a red hot opening segment and a long main event that's long that eats up that much TV time. So most of the time they're going to have a different format, and that means probably more segments. But there was, you know, so much good on the show and not a lot to quibble about. All right, I'll throw back to Jay. Jay, what else have you got for us?
Yeah, I listen to, even though I'm not VIP, I listen to a lot of your stuff, Wade, and I guess one of the reasons why I was asking that is because, you know, I do hear some of your criticisms of AEW, which you just sort of laid out, and tonight felt like a very, like, story-driven show, and I enjoyed that along with just, you know, the action. You know, it seems like they meshed everything very well, but a couple more things I want to touch on, and I know you probably got a lot of guys and maybe some girls lined up, you know, on the waiting. So with Danielson, I feel like he's, like, drifting away from the Blackpool Combat situation. So, you know, I kind of want to see, do you guys feel like that's happening? And if so, where is he going next? Because, I mean, I feel like his character, even though he's amazing in the ring, it's, like, it's undefined. I don't know if he's, you know, Bryan Danielson, the, you know, fire-up babyface, or if he's Bryan Danielson, the jerky heel. You know, it seems like he's kind of sort of in the middle there. And with Moxley, you know, Wade, I'm a sucker for stuff like this, but with Moxley and Punk, you know, that stuff being so intense, I mean, I felt like it was very true to their characters as far as just Punk being the wordsmith on the mic that he is, and Moxley kind of like being a great, great mic guy too, but more of a intense, let's just fight it out type guy. Like, is there anything potentially like some real animosity or some heat potentially between the two of them, you know, that we know or that you know of or anything like that, because I just felt like it was really good, and not saying that it has to be, but I just thought that was awesome and it could potentially be something there. So that's really it. If you guys can kind of like, you know, give me some feedback on those questions. And,
yeah.
You know, thanks for having me.
Before you hang up, Jay, so you are typically not a Dynamite viewer. Is that what you said at the beginning? Or you just don't call in?
Okay, so
I want to.
Well, I never called in, but
yeah.
I would say I'm a casual Dynamite viewer. You know, I'm typically like aware and informed on what's going on with AEW for the most part. But you know, man, I got a lot going on, man. I got two little kids. I'm, you know, all pretty busy. So, you know, I try to catch Dynamite.
Yeah.
I catch stuff here and there, but like, it's always a lot of wrestling to watch. And like, even with WWE, it's kind of like up and down, you know, going through some droughts as far as just the overall product. But I'm a lifelong watcher of WWE, so I'm always pretty much going to watch and know what's going on.
Did tonight's show make you more likely to try to carve out time for Dynamite more often?
Yes, it did. And you know,
okay.
one of the things I've really been waiting on is I've been waiting to see if something develops with MJF, and I feel like we could potentially be getting closer to a resolution there. So, you know, that's one thing I kept my eye on, and like I always try to tap in and, you know, see what Punk is doing. And like I said, there's so many WWE. So many people that came over from WWE that I was a fan of. So yes, so to answer your question, this will make me more likely to be try to make it a little more appointment television, and I will definitely be tuned in next week.
Yep. All right. Cool. Thanks, Jay. We'll respond to the other things you said too. Good to hear from you here on a Wednesday night. And thanks for being a VIP member. The animosity, the potential legit animosity between Punk and Moxley is I think what AEW wants people to be thinking. I don't know either way. Tyler, have you seen reporting or scuttlebutt at all about that either way?
Not really. I mean, you know, when that's like the end of Punk in WWE when he's probably the most surly. So I can imagine
exactly.
He's not, you know, a mentoring type would be my guess back then.
So that's what I was going to say is like, I remember, you know, people were complimenting like what Punk was doing with the Shield, and Punk's like, eh. It's not that good. Like, it was really grumpy on Twitter. And so, but, you know, I don't know if they just, you know, I mean, it seemed like Punk and MJF were really going at it, but they were, you know, as I reported, you know, collaborating and seemed friendly with each other, you know, a lot more than like Rock and Cena did back in the day, even if they were going for a tone of shoot, like kind of Christian and Jungle Boy are too. I think that's a good vibe for this type of match of just two alpha males with chips on their shoulders who are both surly, a good word to use for both of them, and to just put them in there and let them push each other's buttons and agitate. You know, Moxley saying everybody knows you only came back because you ran out of money is like, whoa, did he just really say that? And then I was like, Punk's got nothing in the chamber to fire back at Moxley. And then he goes, well, I'd fight you right. I'd get physical right now, but I feel if I touched you, you would bleed all over me. And, like, I mean, it's a little more meta than I'm usually in favor of, which is, yeah, you know, your matches are all built around, you know, bleeding all over the place. Not that Punk hasn't done that. But it was like, okay, that's like, you know, you're so brittle, you know, you just are constantly bleeding when people punch you or beat you up. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, okay, I respect Punk, you know, either on the fly or as something they came up with, and it felt extemporaneous, firing back with that. I thought that was the line of the night. But it did seem like, kind of like, you know, where the Christian Jungle Boy stuff about your dad just felt sort of like tasteless, like, really? We're going after dead relatives and try to make it seem real? This didn't feel like cheap heat or tawdry. It felt like two people, kind of like Rock and Cena, legit, I'm going to say, anything. And there's a little bit of that edge that you know don't normally feel on Raw on Monday with Kevin Owens and Drew, you know, you with that almost comical tough guy sounding thing, Drew and the sword and like kind of hitting the people don't usually say that about Drew about his promos and then going after the sword, which people have been critical of. You know, that had a little bit of a edgy vibe of, ooh, you know, let's look at, if you're not looking, you look at the screen to see how Drew responded. And that's how I was here. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to see how Punk responded to what Mox said or how Mox responded to what Punk said. And you especially think Moxie will probably brush out, let anything, you know, just a water off a duck's back. He's going to be a whatever. Punk, you think he's going to be like, whoa, we didn't talk about that. You know, you're waiting for that look. I didn't say you could say that kind of vibe. So it made for compelling television. I wouldn't be surprised if these two aren't best friends, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they're just not saying, yeah, I don't care. Let's go make some money together. You know, and when Punk said, you know, you can be the heart and soul, but I'll be the dollars and cents. You know, Punk's like, I'm the guy who makes a difference in the ratings and buy rates. Who are you? Again, a little meta, but it's kind of a dickish thing to say. And Punk has no problem being dickish. That's, you know, that's his brand. It's a feature, not a flaw in his mind, or it's just his authentic self unapologetically. So yeah, there was a lot to speculate about and enjoy about the dynamic between them, Tyler.
Yeah, I would say I lean more where you are. To me, it felt like two really great improv, you know, comics or improv, you know, people in an improv group where you have a scene and you're really trying to make the other person laugh and you're trying to drop something that they, you know, haven't heard before. That's kind of what it felt like. Like this was laid out, but maybe the line about you ran out of money is something that Moxley added there to get under Punk's skin. And then the other line by Punk there is his rebuttal. And that's why it felt the most real because it was, but there's an understanding there of like, hey, I'm just back. I just won this title. I need this thing to be super hot. I need to, you know, reclaim my spot here. And Moxley is always game to have a hot angle. And that's more what I felt as opposed to, yeah, I mean, they might not be the best of friends, but I don't think that there is like huge animosity. Like they absolutely hate each other. I think everything that Moxley said and has said up to this point, he believes that he is the heart and soul and that he is the guy that should be representing the company. And I think also CM Punk believes everything he's saying where, you know, the ratings have not gone up any bit since Mox has been champion, but you know, people like us, are big fans of him, love his after the first match promo, all that sort of stuff. But you know, Punk is the guy that gets you to WWE levels of engagement and he believes that. And I think both are probably right in what they're saying. So yeah. I think it's just a mix of that. It's like that person at work that you don't hate, but if there's a project and, you know, I don't know, if there's a way that you and your department and them and their department can solve it, you would definitely want to be the one to, you want your group to be the winner. And I think that's how it feels.
Yeah. And there's an adrenaline dump or an adrenaline rush that you can tell is going on when two people in the ring are reacting in the moment and not simply being worried about reciting lines that they memorized and trying to act as if it's, you know, original thoughts that just came to mind. And, you know, I got that vibe of there's adrenaline and thinking on their feet. You know, I mean, Drew and KO on Monday, from what I was told, they did not know everything the other person was going to say by design. Paul Levesque wanted there to be some genuine reactions. And so the idea was, you know, you're going to know that the framework, but not line for line, a script that you read ahead of time. So you don't know what's coming to get some real reactions and to, you know, get a reaction. And that might have been a bit of what was going on here. And I think that makes for some of the most compelling television when that is what is happening. All right, cool stuff. We've got an on-site correspondent coming up. We're going to have a segment with Javier. We got mailbag to get to, too. I'll get to Grant from Detroit next, though. Grant, thanks for calling in. You were up next. What did you think of Dynamite?
I thought it was one of their better put-together shows, to be honest with you. Video packages, backstage interviews, and really good in-ring work. I can't complain. I have to agree with y'all. It's one of the upper third shows for sure.
Yeah. What else about anyway?
So, you know, normally when I call in, I try to point out something that nobody else probably going to bring up. And
sure. This
for probably the second week in a row, it's probably so since we're getting FTR and Wardlow in a trios match, where do you see Swerve and Keith Lee going with the tag belts for All Out? Because now that kind of leaves that wide open with no major challengers like that I can think of, because the Bucks are in the Trios tournament, and I don't know, where do you go with them?
So with All Out, with the lineup so far, we've got the six-man match in Thunder Rosa, Toni Storm, and then an AEW title defense for sure, and the Trios Tag Tournament finals. It crossed my mind earlier in the show and again now, what if, it's kind of a weird match, but what if, I don't know. I'll say Danielson and Garcia form a team and somehow quickly get into contendership for All Out and take on Swerve and Keith Lee. I think you need more time, if they're going to be a team, to work through the issue with JAS, and I think it's more likely that we see a match with, you know, some combination of Danielson and Garcia and maybe someone else against Jericho and Angelo Parker and Matt Menard on the pay-per-view. I don't know. I'd have to think through who's left over after the six-man tournament. What do you think, Tyler? Anything jump out?
Yeah, nothing jumped out. So I pulled up the rankings from August 10th. So I'm sure these will be updated tomorrow. FDR is number one. They're obviously booked. Young Bucks are number two. They're going to be in the finals, one would presume, at All Out. And then you have the Dark Order, the Acclaimed, and the Best Friends, who are also in the tournament but are presumably going to lose. So I would say, you know, it's not ideal, but if you're going to push the Acclaimed, or I guess the Gun Club with their new turn here, that would be an option, maybe a triple threat between those three teams, which is not, you know, that's probably the least hyped match on the card if it's going to be there, or if you have an Orange Cassidy and Trent Beretta, if you can have Chuck get fake injured in a match and make that, that's kind of where it is, unless another team jumps in here. But yes, I would say the tag division is probably the weakest division of all, and this is kind of the problem with multiple belts is, you know, FTR, the Young Bucks versus Swerve and Arguello, one of those two, I think would be a fantastic match, and that's obviously not on the table now. So, yeah, that would be my guess, the Acclaimed, the Gun Club, and a triple threat, or Orange Cassidy and Trent Beretta, I guess, is where they're going at this point.
Yeah, I mean, nothing excites me, especially in kind of the heel-face dynamic. And
yeah,
if you're going to give Keith Lee and Swerve the belts but relegate them to mostly – being a Rampage act without another main event act that you're sort of spending on them, it doesn't feel like they're the main tag champs. I mean, right now there's nothing about the way Keith Lee and Swerve are being presented that would make you think that they're a bigger deal than three, four, five, six other teams. And that's just, you know, and part of that is, like you said, there's so many teams are wrapped up in the Trails tournament, but I mean, FTR and the Young Bucks, just to name two, are clearly a bigger deal than Swerve and Lee. And I just, again, if you don't have all the tag titles, you're going to put the belts. Whoever has the belts, you can just make sure that fans see them as the centerpiece top tag team at that moment, or at least in a virtual tie with whoever the top challengers are. And that's just not the vibe being given off right now. So I hope Tony has something that will make it feel like those tag belts on a big show, a big pay-per-view show, that the tag titles, the AEW tag titles, were a priority, and it doesn't just feel like a filler match. But, you know, they've only got a couple shows to make that happen. Grant, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, because, like, I couldn't come up with anybody, and for them to have probably the deepest tag division in probably all of wrestling, it just seemed, like, really odd that there's just no challengers, like. But besides that, and then, like, not even just them, Wardlow being stuck in the Trios match when he was as hot as he is, it seemed like some misses somewhere in here for me. Like, I don't know. What y'all think?
Grant, I wasn't quite sure if you rounded out with a question there. Did you?
Oh yeah, no. I was just saying, I just felt like it misses, like you missing your tag champs not having really a main contender and your TNT champ not having main contender win in the past. Those have been two of the most featured belts on the whole show.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks, Trey. Appreciate the call. Tyler, anything you want to add to that?
No, I just think, again, that's to all the belts, right? Like, you know, not that the TNT title needs to be defended every show, but one would presume, you know, obviously the TNT title is not going to be defended. Probably the TBS title is not going to be defended, and also the All-Atlantic title is not going to be defended. So do I want that? No. But, you know, if you're going to have all these titles and most of them aren't even defended on pay-per-views, it definitely lowers them even more in my mind.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. So let's actually, before we wait for our on-site correspondent, let's get Javier in here because I don't want to leave him waiting or go super long tonight. So let's bring him in here. Javier, what's on your mind? How you doing?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Tyler. How's it going? Caught me by surprise.
Yes.
I was not as fond of the opening promo. I was actually, the reason you caught me by surprise, I was watching it again to see if I missed something. But I was not particularly, there are a couple things, two things I was not really particularly fond of. Number one was the hangman jab. I'm not sure what the point of that is, because even if even if it's a setup for something for the future, he's basically calling out Hangman. We don't even know if he's there. If the idea is, you know, to make Punk eventually, you know, the heelish guy, but he's calling a guy who we don't even know he's there to make the guy look bad. And, if you're watching it from a point of view of someone who's like watching it, you know, like just pure work, you're thinking, yeah, why is Hangman not coming out after, you know, saying that he doesn't get his rematch, and why is he not coming out? So you're thinking that. So you're thinking poorly about Hangman. And if you're watching it from an analytical point of view, you know, you're used to, you know, there's not much crossover when it comes to storylines in AEW, that each, you know, wrestler's involved in their own segment. And we know that he's involved in whatever's going on with the trio stuff right now. So, you know, he's not going to be involved now with CM Punk on anything. So I'm not, you know, I wasn't fond of them bringing that up just, you know, like that. Cause I it kind of felt more like almost like a burial of Hangman Page than anything.
Interesting. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was, again, that's more of a less important point, and not say that your point is not important, Javier, but like I read that also as it happened, but there's so much more pertinent information in the promo that I can see why we didn't get to it up until this point. But yeah, I mean, that is odd. And is that a you know, is that Punk calling out Hangman for him being champion and him complaining about not getting title shots, or is that just him signaling he's going to be turning heel after this? And then that sets up Hangman to take him on again. I don't know. I don't know how to read it. All the stuff with Hangman since the very beginning of the company has been so strange. And it doesn't know if it's a mix of self-sabotage or sabotage by Tony Khan purposely or not purposely. I mean, he made him champion, so it's hard to say that. But it's just strange. And like, everything kind of with the Hangman character is strange with all the things they do. And there's really no rebuttal by him. And have him save the Young Bucks and then have him say, like, oh, no, I'm not going to help you. I'm going to hang out. Just, like, a strange choice to have that moment. And this is just another series in that history with Hangman. It's just strange, strange booking with him all the way through.
Yeah, it's funny. I wasn't thinking a lot about it. I mean, it was, you know, a comment in passing in a promo that just barreled forward into other places. And it is, yeah, it's a legit talking point and question mark coming out of that.
Well, and then when he continues with that, he mentioned, I mean, because if this were Vince McMahon's WWE, and I it's weird that now I have to put the Vince McMahon in front of the WWE, if this were Vince McMahon's WWE, I would think they were sending Hangman Page a message, because right after that he says that, you know, everyone wants to be the champion, so you have to do championship. So that almost felt like, you know, was he not meeting his, you know, was Hangman Page not meeting his obligations as champion, you know, the outside stuff. So that also felt
totally weird. Like, it almost felt like it was – he went out – he was told to go out there and bury Hangman Page, almost.
What is the best case and worst case scenario, Javier, for that scenario?
I mean, I'm thinking that this is probably – and hoping, well, best case scenario, someone wins a Nobel Peace Prize. But you had to go there. But I think that the I'm hoping that storyline based, in, you know, so that it's more of, let's make this another crisis of conscience, another crisis of confidence for Hangman Page, kind of thing, and we have to rebuild him up again. I don't think – I'd rather not do that again with the same character, but I think that might be it. Other than that, it's like – I mean, honestly, it almost feels like, let's bury the guy before he leaves the territory.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. What else? We'll see. What else, Javier?
Okay. Yeah, it's just weird. It's weird. The other thing in that promo was the thing about him. I mean, you already kind of covered it to some of the meta stuff. I found it more irksome than it sounds like you did. The thing about he said that, you know, Moxley talks about breaking bones. The only one who broke bones, you know, in the last 10 months is me. And I'm like, Moxley has been involved in brutal matches in the time that you've been gone. So, you know, I heard it in the meta way of saying, you know, you're involved in these geek matches, and so, you know, it doesn't really, you know, and you're just, you know, using the spectacle of blood, and that's kind of what I read more into things, and, you know, it felt way too meta for me.
Interesting, Tyler. What do you think of that? Alternate view.
Yeah, I mean, as I'm thinking through it tonight, and obviously with what you proposed at the top of the show, Wade, with the maybe potentially having two matches here between Moxley and Punk, those are just like heelish tendencies to me that I'm getting from Punk. And, you know, like we said earlier too, like, I think he definitely believes everything he's saying. He said many times, you know, what'd he say, like, boo me if I'm lying or something like that. Or tell me I'm not lying. That felt like a very human thing to say, not like a line that he had thought up beforehand. So I think he believes it all, but I think it's to make him to tinge him the heel a little bit more in this matchup if it goes to a second match, because it's going to be hard to have two, you know, faces twice in 3 weeks and have it work. So I think he's going to tinge a little bit heel, at least in this match. And that's kind of where I'm at with this, but I think he truly thinks all what he said.
That's the thing, you know. I mean, tell me when I'm lying is sort of a way that extinguishes or snuffs out some of the boos, because it makes fans go, well, I don't like what he's saying and I don't like his tone, but there's some truth in it. And it's sort of, you know, Punk wants, if he's being a heel, he wants to be a heel who believes what he's saying is the truth. And if that's where they're going, or he's just leaning heel, he certainly has that going for him, and it comes across that way. If he's not at all going for being a heel, then, you know, there's a little bit of a tone deafness, but I think it's still effective at just seeming like two surly alpha males who each hold a version of the title are going to go to war. And if they're unleashing on each other verbally that much, then imagine what will happen when the bell rings. And I think they can get people pulled into that story.
Mm-hmm.
Javier?
Yeah, and then issue what I had with the character work too, because, you know, I'm putting myself in Moxley's shoes, and when there's, you know, besides the fact that Punk is basically disrespecting the you know, Moxley's entrance and everything, which is fine, you know, Punk is definitely playing this kind of like down the middle, where if you're a Moxley fan, you're gonna really hate, you know, what he's doing. And if you're a CM Punk fan, you're like, oh, you know, look how edgy he is. But you know, looking from Moxley's point of view, there comes a point where Moxley's in the middle of a line and he basically steps all over it. And then Moxley basically had to reset to finish it. But I'm thinking, like, you know, in the character of Moxley, of everything we've seen, the moment that he stepped on that line, I'm like, you know, the only thing that makes sense is at this point is if he puts it on the mic and just, you know, goes after him at that point. Because, you know, that's, you know, that was like, he did it a few times. He's done it a lot in his promos where he says a snide thing in the middle while someone's, you know, talking. And I'm like, Moxley does not seem like the kind of guy that will, you know, not just basically reset and finish what he was going to say. Moxley felt more like someone who would just go after him. So that was the other thing I found very incongruent with the Moxley character.
Yeah, interesting points. I want to almost rewatch. Well, I was going to rewatch it anyway, but I'll rewatch it with some of the points that you haven't that you're bringing up here, Augur.
Yeah, I was in the middle of that too, so I wanted to, because I was trying to see it from your point of view. That's funny.
Yeah.
So
the end, though, do you think that helped sell the match, either, you know, at the time we thought for the pay-per-view, but for next week's show? Do you think that the end feeling, and that doesn't, not all is forgiven. It's not the be-all, end-all. You can still have a match that builds anticipation, or a segment that builds anticipation for a match and still feel like it's counterproductive in other ways or critique it. But in the end, I think when those two have a ring entrance in it and the bell rings, you know, I think AEW is going for kind of Cena, Punk, and Chicago type vibes. Just oh my, you know, I can't wait for the bell to ring to see these two go at it. And I think they accomplished that in the kind of the macro and the aggregate.
Yeah, overall with everything else going on, that's true. I mean, the only thing that doesn't defend was the Hangman Punk thing, but that's a question for another day to see if, you know, something else happens there.
Yeah.
You know, and then my thought process when they announced that they were going to have the match next week, my initial thought was, okay, so that means that CM Punk and MJF are back on the table, and now that, you know, that the CM Punk thing, we basically need to put the detour back, meaning, you know, like I think it was mentioned on the Fix where Tony Khan books towards an actual end goal, and then, like, if something happens in between, he'll pivot to something else, but then he eventually still wants to get to that end goal. So, you know, and I'm thinking, like, well, you only have, like, what, a week or two to, you know, if it is MJF. So I'm fearful that it might end up being MJF to set up MJF for the pay-per-view, because I'm knowing how Tony Khan, you know, books he has the idea and then he gets to it. I think that might end up being what it is. I'm really hoping that, like I said, that it's going to be two matches. I don't think it's the first time they've done it where they had a match earlier on and then the rematch at the pay-per-view. You know, so I'm hoping that's the case, but I'm fearful it's not.
Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I looked at, there's only one Dynamite after next week before the pay-per-view. So, yeah. If that's the case, you have one week to book it. And, I mean, essentially this match here, I mean, there's a lot of meta stuff going around it with, obviously, Punk being out for a long time, Moxley having a good run, having the thought in your mind as a fan, like, oh, man, maybe when Punk does come back, like, should Moxley keep this belt? Because he's doing a great job. And, you know, when that would have been sacrilege to say a couple months ago. So, you know, they've essentially, without all that, they built this match in a week. So I think that gives Tony Khan probably some faith to build another match in a week, but it is fraught to do that. You're more often than not going to not be able to book a good match in a week than booking a good one. So,
Javier, what else?
On the Kenny Omega thing, I'm about 75% confident that it's totally a work. I think commentary overplayed the whole, oh, look, he's wearing this. Oh, you know, he doesn't look like the same. And I think they overplayed it. The botched, I want to say best moonsault ever, but that's not it.
Death Valley, well, it's more of a Death Valley driver.
No.
You
cannot escape flip.
You can't escape. Yeah. The you can't escape. That looked like it was obviously, you know, set up to fail. The knocking out Dragon Lee, I don't know, but there's a card that does not have Dragon Lee almost dying. It's a card that he wasn't booked at.
So, you know, so, you know, so I don't know about
what,
that.
What is, Javier, what is the payoff that makes sense? Kenny Omega has this big return and the announcers spend, you know, 12 minutes of TV time talking about how beat up he looks. And drawing attention to bot, you know, to botch spots, and then it's like, oh, that was just a ruse. Even though the trails titles are on the line, Kenny's really just fine. Look, he's going to tear off the brace in a triumphant moment. That feels too illogical to be a deliberate plan. Is there some other option, or do you disagree with my framing of that?
I am thinking that they're going to basically find a way to get him off the team, like an attack by Cole and the rest of the other two guys, to take out Kenny. So he'll be back on the shelf for a little bit. And in order, and then the third member is going to end up being, Hangman Page, you know, Kenny Omega's spot. So we basically get Kenny Omega
that's
for like a week or two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause I think it's going to happen soon.
Oh, and playing into your interpretation or theory is, you know, the knee injury, Kenny did a very good job making it seem like he blew out his knee, but then he ran the ropes just fine right after that. Well, right before, I can't remember who it was ultimately who grabbed his leg, but because two people did. I can't remember who the second one, what the order was. But that was built into the match as a work. And that would play into the idea that everything that made him look kind of clunky and slow and a little beat off that the announcers were drawing attention to was also part of the work, and there just happened to be one thing that was obviously a work while the other stuff didn't feel that way because, you know, someone could have gotten hurt.
Yeah, so now whether that means that there's going to be a change in the tournament, because the other thing is, aren't they going to I got to look at the standings, I forgot what it was, but doesn't this put him also on a direct line of confrontation with Will Ospreay? I don't know if they're going to want to, like, you know, do that either. So, I can see that him being taken out earlier on the tournament . So those were my thoughts on those two things. I am curious to hear about your Jungle Boy. A promo. I thought it was better than the last few weeks, but that's not really saying anything.
What was the last thing you said, Javier? Sorry.
I thought it was better than Jungle Boy's promos the last few weeks, but that's not really saying much.
Yeah. When the fans were, when at least one fan or a few fans were starting a what chant, and it just,
yeah.
First of all, it doesn't help when you can hear a pin drop in the arena when a babyface is talking. Like, and it wasn't like, ooh, we're on the edge of our seat, what's he going to say? It was more, you know, something else. But when the what chant rang out, he just paused and gave that fan a death stare. Like, I thought he was just going to throw the mic down and just charge in the ring and just beat the crap out of the guy. Like, again, a little window into Jungle Boy that does not fit at all the way that he was presented and framed and came off prior to this Christian feud where, you know, he wasn't cutting promos. And you know, I don't know if this is a revelation of who he always was or he's been instructed to have a little bit more of an edge because it's in response to Christian going places that, you know, you don't want to no sell or what. But, man, that was the camera showed a reverse angle and then cut away right away of sort of that death stare. But I don't know. I mean, this has not been a winning summer to me of Jungle Boy as a rising, you know, pillar.
Kind of.
I was just let the silence go as long as it could. That's my face move there. No,
you know the rule when Javier is on. There's always a little bit of a pause, so we just wait for Javier to talk instead of talking over it. But that didn't work this time. Javier calls you up for some reason.
There you go.
I
want
to hear what you have to say
through the phone.
Normally you would.
I know.
You would refer to Tyler. I'm like, I'm.
So let's do this right. As far as Jungle Boy goes, how do you feel, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be a really good heel. I think he's got that built in, and you know, like it's not working. And I just those tendencies, like you said, like I'm glad you brought up the stare to the fan. Like that was a red flag of all red flags that it's really getting under his skin. that someone would dare to, you know, be opposite of what his character is being presented as. And you know, this angle started, this is kind of the opposite of the Moxley CM Punk thing. And a good example of why you kind of have a match as soon as you can within reason, because if this match would have happened already, I think the story would be in a better place, and they've kind of extended it to get to the pay-per-view. And I don't think it's benefited Jungle Boy in the slightest, where, you know, a month ago, if Jungle Boy beat Christian, it would have felt like a big moment for him and would have elevated him up the card. And now it feels like, yeah, it's got to happen, but I don't know if I really want to see it as much as I did as a fan before. And that is a lot to do with Jungle Boy and his lack of, you know, I just don't see him able to be a top guy on the mic like we saw with Moxley and CM Punk tonight. And I think that's important to be in the upper echelon. He'll be more in that Darby Allin where he'll be rising for a period and then losing for a good period. And I just think that's kind of his trajectory.
Javier, back to you.
I don't want to say I want to bury Tony Khan's booking, but his storytelling chops. There was a line during the FTR thing when they brought up the Pinnacle, and I'm like, why would they bring up the Pinnacle? I mean, I know that, you know, this guy, you know, that Wardlow was in the Pinnacle, but, oh, wait, so was FTR. Totally forgotten about that. And
it was such,
you know,
a poor faction to begin with, because it almost felt like the only time they appeared on camera was after 3 weeks of people going, is that still a thing? And they would just sort of have them appear, but then they'd just go on and do their own thing again. Yeah, that was weird.
And when they've shown up to help each other recently, I don't think it was ever mentioned in commentary and brought up. I think this might be the first time I remember hearing the word Pinnacle in like weeks.
Well, it plays into Tyler's theory that maybe they're planting the seed for, you know, yeah, MJF to return, and he wins the title at All Out, and they're, you know, setting up more than just Punk Wardlow. They want, Punk MJF, that, you know, they want Wardlow in the mix too.
Well, if that does happen, do we think that MJF is not going to be a babyface? I mean, he was a babyface at the end of his promo there.
Maybe Punk goes heel on Moxley, retains the, you know, like hardcore heel, like goes all, not just lean in, goes heel, wins in a nasty way, wins the title, MJF, triumphant babyface return, and he does link up with the wildly popular FTR and somehow reunites with Wardlow? I mean, does that happen? You talk about storytelling. I don't know how you get to that spot. So I don't know. Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how you work Wardlow into that, because I mean, after that feud, I'd love to see an apology video from MJF apologizing to Wardlow and, like, you know, show that he really has a heart. And I'm so, I mean, that would be kind of funny, but I don't know, maybe kind of productive. But a babyface MJF versus a heel Punk, that would definitely be interesting thing to see. I'm definitely all on board on that one. But unfortunately, before that, we have to deal with Wardlow and FDR versus Sanjay Dutt and Jay Lethal and the big guy whose name is escaping me. With how hot that FTR was, we have them dealing with that as opposed to, you know, wrestling any of the other 1 billion awesome teams that they got on the show. No Young Bucks, Swerve in Our Glory, you know, anybody other than dealing in a trio situation with those guys.
Any thoughts, Tyler?
I think I talked about it earlier with the belts. It's just, yeah, it's a lack of use of your hottest act, and they're kind of be, not that they are similar to Jungle Boy, but it's that same sort of category where you got to strike while it's hot. And it's just interesting that there's examples of it working on this show, and there's examples of it not. But I do think FTR are so talented that they're going to be able to rekindle that flame, if you will, and become a really top thing. And you know, they can really yeah, I think the sky's the limit with them, and you can kind of turn that on whenever you want. I think Tony Khan is stretching the limit of that ability at this point, but I think it's still there. And if there's a branded show after All Out, I think they can headline it and get the tag titles and go from there. I think they obviously want Swerve and Our Glory to have the titles and defend it through one pay-per-view. And then I think it's all, you know, them losing is very much on the table, and FTR being, you know, crowned the ultimate tag team and then going against Red Dragon and the Young Bucks is kind of on the table for the fall. It's kind of the trajectory I see, which would totally rekindle them in that top spot.
All right.
The last thing I got, because you mentioned Swerve in Our Glory in the tag team situation. I was a holdout Wade for quite a while in the ranking system. I'm like, look, it doesn't really matter all that much. You just turn it on Wednesdays, and you know, it's a way that you get one of these lower, you know, not as important tag teams to, you know, have a TV championship match, and just, you know, so it's, you know, more than a squash match than that. But today, when Swerve and Our Glory was talking to a Private Party and said, oh, you know, you're not even ranked. He goes, yes, we are. We're number five as of today. I'm like, okay, it's kind of the ranking system.
yeah.
I give up.
It doesn't have a lot of credibility when a team that people were wondering if they were still in the company, you know, if you're watching Dynamite, you would have forgotten about it. Do you know when the last appearance of Dynamite was for them?
If you give
me
a minute,
like
time,
a Hardy Family Office thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was months. You know, yeah. a couple months at least. So,
I mean, they showed up. They were on TV last Rampage, setting up, you know, this, because there was a confrontation between them and Andrade, saying, you know, you got to get the job done, basically. But I don't. You know, other than being like involved in that, like in the background, yeah, I don't remember the last match they had on TV. I can't, you know. I mean, if you want to talk for a few seconds, I can find out about it in a minute.
Yeah, it's always.
I mean,
good.
I would
it's
be the
just,
name
it,
of one.
It is, yes. And out of nowhere, it's a out of nowhere title match for the Dynamite audience, and a short, lacking credibility build up for even them getting a title. It cheapens a title shot. When, you know, even if there's just this short little backstory on Rampage, it's not enough. I mean, I'm glad they did what they did on Dynamite tonight to set it up. And, you know, that's fine. But, yeah, it's a real stretch of credibility that they'd be a top five tag team in this company. Well, you know, that just means you either forced it because you want to justify a title shot, or your ranking system is really screwy.
I mean, and I don't think I really sold exactly why I really want them to drop the ranking system now, is that on Rampage, they were granted the shot by Swerve and Our Glory because they said, oh, none of the, you know, because, I mean, again, just breaking narrative, breaking the or, you know, breaking the fourth wall, Keith Lee or Swerve said that none of the ranked tag teams want to wrestle us because they're involved in other things. So we're going to give Private Party a shot, you know, so, and then like all of a sudden, like today they're like, oh, we're ranked now. And I'm like, this is just, oh my God, please just,
wow.
No.
Okay.
I mean, that's the reason why I'm like, no, I'm done with the ranking system. I mean,
that's
this officially made it a parody. You officially made it a parody today.
Wow. Yeah. Good point there. Anything else, Javier?
No. Do you remember the name of either of the two Private Party guys? I don't remember.
Do I know what?
Their names.
What are their names?
Yeah, it's Mark
Quinn and Isaiah.
And Cassidy. Yeah. M-A-R-Q.
Yeah, so...
M-A-R-C-Q. Yeah, me and Wade White write their names occasionally, and we can't spell their names out, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, well, that wasn't the spelling. I'll look for it later. I'm not going to spend all the time here looking for it.
Yeah,
you can email
us. Stay tuned, everybody.
I'll text you when was the last time they were.
Yeah, I would say, the fact that it takes this much legwork to know when they're on TV, I think, proves our point.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that's pretty much all I had.
Cool.
Everybody check out New Japan Pride Podcast, and I will be joining Greg to talk the G1 on Sunday. So.
Wrestling Night America on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Search PW Torch and subscribe. It's free, and there are some great shows on that lineup every day of the week, different theme, different hosts. Search PW Torch, subscribe for free. Yes, Tyler?
I was just saying, Javier, just like a not even an explanation, just who you got in the G1 final.
I hadn't actually watched today's show yet, but I had it spoiled. I had originally Nitro, so really disappointed in that. I don't think it could be Ospreay. Ospreay's got the U.S. title, and he's got like 90 people coming after him. It's got to be Okada. I think it should end up being an Okada. If not Jay White, Okada with whoever has the title by then.
So, yeah, go VIP to hear Javier's coverage in the New Japan Pride podcast of the G1 and more after that. Javier, always great hearing from you. Thanks for joining us a little earlier than usual.
I had Naito winning because originally I had Naito winning, and I thought I actually thought that it might end up being Okada against the AEW World Champion at Wrestle Kingdom. That was my original thought.
Mm.
But now who knows?
Well, there's going to be 7 nights of Wrestle Kingdom, so who knows?
God.
There, so.
We both froze. We're like, what? What? Oh, no. He's joking. He's joking. All right, cool. Thanks, Javier. Take care. Have a good one. Our on-site correspondent noted that the show was running long, the Rampage taping. So one of the reasons I brought Javier on early. So that said, let's go back to some calls until we hear from Jason. We'll bring Deke onto the show here. Deke from Michigan, good to hear from you. What do you think of Dynamite?
Hey, guys, what's happening, man? Everything good?
Yeah, things are good. Things are good.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm sorry I missed, I don't know when you came on. I'm sorry I missed the first half of the show. And you know me, man. I'm not anti-AEW, but I'm not like one of these people that, hey, AEW, whatever they do, everything's great. A lot of my friends, we're half and half. Half of my friends loved the beginning. Half of them hated it. I'm on the hate.
Huh. All right.
I don't know. It will. And I'll be honest. I don't know. And I love all my friends, and I love you guys and whoever, if you think different. But, like, I don't know how you think this is good. CM Punk literally came out and did nothing but talk about WWE the whole time. And he did nothing but say, but Jon Moxley is not better than Roman Reigns. He's not better than Seth Rollins. He's not better than Kofi Kingston. He said that. And then
he said,
none of you guys are good at anything. How is that good? How is that good? How are you pumping your company? You just shit on your entire company.
Well, especially if Punk proves him right with a victory.
Yeah, well, you know, I know what he's doing. Wait, I know what he's doing, but that's CM Punk, and that's the shoot. All he does is shoot on people, and that shoot stuff just doesn't work in the end. And you can rip on Scott Hall all you want, but Scott Hall used to say all the time, don't say you're going to kill anybody because you're not going to kill them. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to rip you limb from limb. No, you're not. And then he said, don't say your opponent sucks, because if you say your opponent sucks and then you beat them, well, great. You beat the guy that's who are you. You beat the sucks guy. Good for you. And I felt that's what CM Punk did here. He said Jon Moxley sucks. And then he played into the internet thing, which is true, by the way. Oh, what are you going to bleed on me? I mean, CM Punk is a joke, dude. I'm sorry. He's just a caricature of what the internet wants a wrestler to be currently. He's a character wants wrestler to be currently. And everybody's so sarcastic nowadays, and everybody's so in tune. They've been reading the torch. It's all your fault, Wade. It's all your fault. We've been reading you for 30 years. We've been reading Dave and now Sean and whoever and everybody else on Earth. And everybody's so jaded and everybody's so inside that we got to have Punk saying, hey, you're going to bleed on me. Okay, it's a good line, but you know what? It's true. So
Deke, I'm gonna mute you because I wanna jump in here. So I apologize, but I have that power as host because don't wanna lose my train of thought. I don't think it's a shoot. Like to me, if this were real, could somebody say that and it would make sense? If this was MMA, could somebody say in UFC during the UFC Pride days, and someone comes over from Pride to UFC and says to their next opponent, you're not even as good as these people I beat in Pride. That could be said. That's not like a work shoot, or it's not like a meta thing. It's I'm insulting you in a way that I'm trying to get heel heat. Now I am an advocate for Scott Hall's Scott Hall University on wrestling. I think Scott Hall was a phenomenal wrestling mind. Had lots of issues, and not the most charming and engaging person to be around a lot of the time. But he was smart. But I don't think Punk vowed to kill John Moxley. I think, the kill thing is kind of the line you cross into. If you're saying I'm going to maim you or I'm going to beat you or I'm going to, leave you in a pile of your own blood and that kind of thing, that's different than I'm going to kill you. I think that's where the line got crossed with Scott Hall. If you're straw poll, your informal anecdotal poll of, 50% loved it, 50% didn't, I respect that. And I think you can look at this as a divisive or maybe polarizing is a better way to put it, a promo, because it did go into that zone. And Javier, brought up some of his points too. I think when two people are going at it and the adrenaline is flowing and the fans are oohing and aahing, and if the intent is for Mox to be the heart and soul badass babyface and Punk to be the prickly, egotistical, I'm insecure, so I'm going to try to tear you down and put some doubt in your mind while bragging about myself. If that's the goal, I just think mission was accomplished. Nobody thinks Kofi Kingston's better than John Moxley. People might think Seth and Roman are better than Moxley, but it's still not by much. And Moxley can still be great and you can still, and better than Punk and still think, yeah, but I think Seth and Roman are a notch better. However you would rationalize that in a way that is totally subjective, because they all have great resumes and they all have different strengths and weaknesses, storyline and in terms of their work in the ring. So to me, it just seemed like these are two guys who want to tear each other apart. And if I touch you, you're going to bleed. Again, that's not that. If you aren't on social media, if you aren't on the internet and you hear that, that's Punk saying, if I touch you, you're going to bleed because you almost pass out from blood loss in every one of your matches. Let's save it for the ring. I think it walked up to the line, but it didn't cross it in ways that normally do irritate me. Tyler, are Deke and Javier framing this differently for you, or where are you compared to, an hour and a half ago?
No, I'm still on team that I liked it a lot. And I respect everyone's opinion on the matter. And I think, I'm not saying this is a monumental promo in wrestling history, but any sort of top tier wrestling promo should be a little divisive. And, I think this is kind of a modern heel reaction that CM Punk is getting from a section of the audience. And I think that is what I read, is that CM Punk believes everything he said, or pretty much close to it. I think he definitely believes that Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, if they were in John Moxley's spot, would have drawn more money in his position than John Moxley has. I don't think that's any question that Punk believes that. So to have that be your baseline case of why he should not be champion, I think is something that he believes and is valid in pretty much any setting that you look at. If you look at the champion as someone who should draw money for the company and for themselves. But yeah, I think, you know, if Punk beats Moxley and then goes on the I love your smiles, that's how he opened this promo, said like, I want to be tough tonight, but I love all your smiles, you know, then it's the character work is weird. And I more tend to agree that he's just trying to be edgy for the sake of being edgy as opposed to doing good character work. But if he comes out of this match and is a heel or heel light character, and he's kind of more out of that phase, which I think he would have been anyway after winning the title, of being happy to be there and happy to put on a show for the fans, and more be about his business, more be about winning, more be about the alpha male that he thinks that he is, I think it works. But it's all about execution during the match and after the match on his character to justify anything I'm saying.
All right, DK, I'm going to unmute you. I apologize for doing that, but I didn't want to lose my train of thought on what I want to say. We do have our on-site correspondent standing by, so Deke, we'll keep it sort of brief here, but I want to throw back to you for some rebuttal and another point if you want to make it.
Thank you. Thanks, Wade. I'm going to disagree with you harshly, for the first time, man. I think you're looking at this the wrong way. I don't think this is heel heat. I think this is real people that don't like this person. I don't like CM Punk. I don't like him as a person. I don't like him as a wrestler. And I think there's a lot of people like me. And I think he put that out there today. It's not heel heat. It's like literally, I don't like you. And it has nothing to do with Moxley, but what he said to Moxley. He undercut Moxley today. So you can say it's heel. He undercut him today. And that's the problem. Like, he didn't – it's not a heel thing. Like, he made him look weak today. Or are you going to bleed on me today? That's not heel heat. That's
right.
Undercutting your gimmick.
Deke, just in the interest and courtesy, Deke, as a courtesy to our outside correspondent standing by, I get you mean what you're saying, but don't just keep repeating it because I want you to have time to make another point before I kind of move on.
Yeah, no, it's just that's just not good. Like, you're undercutting that guy's thing, and I don't think that's
I would ask, like, did John Moxley, and I'm just asking this, I'm not trying to, like, get in a huge debate here, John Moxley undercut, did he undercut CM Punk when he said, you only came back because you basically are broke now?
Yeah.
And, you know,
yes.
I think they undercut each other all night. Okay. Yeah, and it's the same thing there, right? I mean, so
when you're shooting, they're shooting at each other about nothing. And Punk said Rollins was better, Roman's better, Danielson's better, Kingston's better, and then he goes, you don't do anything better than anybody else. That's a quote. He goes, your group does nothing better than anybody else. What are you saying about AEW then?
So, Deke, I'll close
that's
out with this.
Good.
I do not think that Moxley fans are going to now be thinking, huh, I used to think John was badass and I bought his merch, but I think I'm going to give it away to Goodwill and not buy tickets to see him. Like, I just don't think what Punk said rang true enough. If you undercut someone by saying something that is sort of, you're trying to swerve away from and avoid people thinking about. But it rings true if it's brought up. And I just don't buy that there's Moxley fans or casual fans or you know, non-Moxley fans who were, you know, going to buy the pay-per-view, but now they're thinking, well, yeah, Moxley is sort of the third guy of the Shield, and all he does is bleed, and he's not really very good. It's like, I just don't think that's going to be the effect. Deke, I apologize. I want to get to our on-site correspondent. The show's running very long, and I don't want to keep our on-site correspondent waiting because I know the show went long for him. So we'll get to Jason next. Jason, thanks for calling in after what you relayed to me was a long Rampage taping after a high-energy Dynamite. Welcome. Thanks for being our on-site correspondent.
Hey, thanks for having me. Really long show, but really awesome show.
Awesome. Yeah. So first I want to say just we'll save spoiler references, because I don't want to rule anything in or out that happened on Rampage until a little bit later, and we'll give people a little heads up. So people really don't want to hear that anything that happened on Rampage. We'll separate that from our Dynamite conversation first. You kind of joined in on you called in and heard our previous caller Deke mention that he is on the side of really not liking that Hangman, excuse me, the Hangman, the Punk and Moxley promo. And I want to get your take on a personal level, how it affected you, because Tyler and I were big fans of it. But Javier had some critiques of it too and didn't like it or thought there were some flaws. How did you like it, and how did the crowd react? And by the end, do you think people were a lot more excited about those two facing each other than they were before they arrived at the arena?
Yeah. I mean, the crowd just was going bananas for both Punk and Mox. Because leading up to the show, neither one of them had been announced. Like all the promos and stuff. So it was kind of like, are they doing something tonight? Is it just gonna be like a video package? Are they gonna be there live? We just weren't sure up until like right before the show began. And then Punk got just top notch pop. Place erupted. I'm a personal big CM Punk fan. Loved the back and forth. Mox coming out. I mean, I think they said some things that rang true, but then obviously it was some things just to promote the fight too. So rave reviews for me.
Cool. Talk about the size of the crowd. And just what kind of energy or vibe you got from them compared to other shows.
Yeah, well, Charleston, West Virginia is, NWA territory, right? It was the Jim Crockett era, Ricky Steamboat off camera got a huge pop when he walked out. So growing up as a kid in that era, and then up until, all throughout WCW, Charleston, West Virginia has always been, NWA, WCW, and now AEW country, where WWE, for whatever reasons, always stayed out of Charleston. Like, when they come to West Virginia, they go to the outskirts of, Huntington, West Virginia, which is, far away, and such. So, yeah, the crowd size, about 5,000 or so. They had three-quarters of the top upper level, blocked off, away from the camera. But then, probably sold out for the rest of the area. I know WrestleTix said there was a few hundred seats left as of this morning, but, just jam packed, everyone on the edge of the seat. The energy was kept. I mean, Dark ran an hour and a half, and then, a 2-hour Dynamite, and then, Rampage ran long too. It was an hour and a half of Rampage. And then in between, we had Tony Khan out and a lot of shenanigans in between. So, it was a 5-hour show tonight.
Did during Dynamite, was there a point that the crowd was very into it? And then was there a time when it seemed like they weren't into what was going on in terms of energy or being invested in what was happening?
Yeah. The only time that I think relaxed a little bit was during the women's match. It was very smart to have the gun club because that seemed like the bathroom break match. So the fact that only went 1 minute, I think got a lot of people to turn around. And then unfortunately, I think the break went into the women's match instead a little bit later.
Funny. So the Danielson Garcia match was about a half hour. And it was a lot of mat-based wrestling. And, I mean, it looked like they were just two cousins in the basement trying to pin each other, at times. I mean, it felt kind of real and snug and tight and intense. But I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm curious how that played in terms of – I mean, it had some high spots too. But how did that play in terms of the crowd? Because Garcia's not this – top pushed winning record guy, as good and well respected and up and coming as he is, that's a lot to ask a crowd to invest, especially at that point. Sounds like nearly 2 hours into the action.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the yeah, they definitely laid it in tight. You know, I was in the front row. The chops and the slaps and the kicks, like, man, it was echoing deep into the crowd. Lots of oohs and ahs. I mean, there was definitely people who were just there for Brian. Absolutely were into it all the way through. I mean, when he was, you know, became like the moment of his zen, taking every shot, like the place was going bananas. So.
For the moment with Danielson and Garcia, it just sounded like fans are like, yeah, we want those two to team. We like Garcia. And the chant of "You're a wrestler" just seemed like the match was a success.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're a wrestler. Jericho getting booed. You know, like, which, by the way, he came out after Dynamite was over. His music started playing. He came out, yelled at us for booing him earlier, infusing Daniel Garcia and trying to get him turned on him, stopped his music into it and said, West Virginia is never allowed to sing his songs ever again. he kept it going, which was awesome. But, yeah, if the goal is to make Garcia, the next Brian Danielson, then, you know, mission accomplished on that first step there, because it was a big first step, and
yeah.
he definitely got over, and he was a bloody mess and looked like a up and coming star. It was back in the old days, you know, when Sting went with Flair for 45 minutes. Afterwards, you're like, man, Sting's got something. You know, it really felt like they were really trying to make Garcia, you know, a year or two from now, it's going to be the match they look back at, you know.
Absolutely. So one more question I'll throw to Tyler. Did not hear commentary during the Kenny Omega match. So why don't you talk about the pop Kenny got coming out, and the pop someone had mentioned they thought the pop for the Bucks wasn't great coming out. So I want your arena perspective on that. But during the match, did it come across like obvious to you that Kenny was still injured and beat up, and were you questioning whether it was a storyline or real and maybe he shouldn't be medically cleared or it's a storyline? How did it come across to you without the commentary kind of trying to frame things?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was just storyline. I mean, he definitely had lots of tape underneath his shirt. And you can see that up close. There were definitely some things, you know, strapped in and such. And there was, you know, moments on the side. I mean, there was definitely a couple of times where I saw, like, Cutler and Michael Nakazawa, like asking if he was okay. And he was just like, yeah. So I think there might have been a little bit of caution there. But then he did cut a promo afterwards and talked about it a little bit. We'll talk about that in a second. But as far as pops go, yeah, Omega got a monster pop. It was probably equivalent to CM Punk earlier because he was the first big star, and then, you know, Omega returning. It was, you know, it was one of those, like, you know, not a good kept secret, right? So I'm pretty sure everyone was expecting. There was lots of signs, you know, for Omega. And I thought the pop was both good for him, and it was pretty good for the Bucks too. I mean, it was definitely, you know, again, probably a little bit of fatigue at that point, but it was still definitely, you know, a good pop overall. But with no commentary, you know, we all kind of what was going on with Don Callis. I mean, did he explain their relationship still or no?
They're both from Winnipeg, and he's a big Kenny booster. Tyler, was there more to it than that?
No, I mean, they came out. I know you love the tunnel gimmick, Wade. I do too. But they all came out of the good guy tunnel. So that's all visually you're going to get, I think, from AEW. They're good guys now. So
possibly disagree with that was afterwards. You know, Kenny talked to the crowd and said that he is not necessarily a good guy, and said that, you know, moving forward, he may take his aggressions. He said he broke down because of the crowd, and said that he may take his aggressions out on the people moving forward. And he likened us to a prickly kitty cat that he has it like poops and he has to scoop their poop and then said that, you know, scratches things and claws things, but at the end of the day he loves his cat and has
that, so, that know, was Kenny Omega and,
yeah
that
yeah that
weird.
Was Kenny
yeah,
that's that sounds like Kenny, though. That's like real Kenny.
Right,
so that's
right,
good
right. It was a very Kenny Omega thing to say and do. But yes, so it was different.
I do not think that belongs on television because there's going to be a lot of people watching Dynamite who have no idea how they should feel about Kenny after thinking he's a triumphant babyface, teaming with a just-turned babyface, Young Bucks, comparing the fans to cat poop and saying I'm a bad guy, or I might not be a good guy. It's just like, you know, there comes a point where you're just too cute by half, but they didn't put it on TV. It was just for the fans. But even so, it's
right,
quirky
right.
Kenny. And you know, yeah.
Yeah. Like he was just being quirky. I mean, there was definitely someone like filming him. So maybe, you know, there might be a clip of part of what he was talking about, you know, just,
being the elite.
A big rah-rah. Yeah. It was like a big rah-rah speech of, you know, their company and everything they went through in 3+ years. And the last time they were there, you know, they were trios. Like they had a trios match against the Best Friends when they were in Charleston in October of 2019. So he said it was fitting that he came back in a trios match in Charleston, West Virginia. So that got like, you know, like a big pop cut to that.
And Jason, you didn't get to hear the commentary, but during the match, the announcers were just saying, you know, Kenny's looking beat up. Jim Ross was really stressing it, and he said he's got ring rust, but he's still tough. And they were just really playing that up. And it was either we're self conscious of how beat up Kenny really still is and looks, and we're just not going to ignore it, or it's some sort of storyline. We just can't figure out how there's a good rationalization for a storyline that this triumphant top star EVP, former world champion, took, you know, 9 months off. But your reintroduction to him is he's about to turn 40 and he can't execute moves he used to, and his knee is giving out, and he's, you know, it's lucky he's tough because he sure is showing ring rust. Like, it just feels like a really awkward way to reintroduce somebody, even if there's an angle planned. And so
yeah,
I was curious how it came across without that.
Yeah, there was a moment where, like, his knee gave out when he was doing the Terminator run, but it looked like that the assistant actually missed his leg. He was supposed to trip him, and he missed, and that was Kenny, like, I think, selling the reason why he wasn't going to do the jump, and then they reset, and they tripped him the second time.
That would explain why it didn't really fit with the rest of what I thought they were doing in the match. Tyler, what have you got for?
on that match, did Dragon Lee walk out of there, or did he get some medical attention? We were all just kind of concerned about him, and it cut away. It looked like he got legit knocked out in that match. Did you see anything that would at least alleviate us that he's okay?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure he was fine. I'm not sure where it went off. Did y'all see Andrade like dropping him?
Yes. So we saw Kenny give him the V trigger, and then he was dead weight. Kenny struggled to lift him, gave him his move. It sort of felt like an awkward landing, but I know really talented wrestlers can make it look like they're dead, and they're not. And sometimes they go for that. And then Kenny like lay down after the match. I don't know what angle you saw, if you noticed, but had some words with him afterwards, almost seeming to like, are you okay? And I apologize for stiffing you with my knee. That's what it came across as. But then they went through with the turn, but even the turn, it sort of felt like, should we be lifting this guy up or does he need medical help? But they just, you know, went with it anyway, but he still kind of seemed pretty dead weight. So anyway, that was just, my take through the TV, and I think Tyler's too.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely seemed like dead weight and was struggling to get him up. So, you know, if there was something legit there, didn't seem like afterwards they put a towel over his head and he seemed to walk okay, to the back without a problem. And the, you know, Bucks and Kenny stayed in the ring to talk to the fans. So it didn't seem like there wasn't like a, you know, like the medical doctor wasn't, you know, doing anything with him like immediately after.
Okay, cool. Well, that's good.
Doesn't mean he doesn't have a concussion, but that is good.
Yeah.
He has not, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe when he got behind the curtain, it was different, but I don't know.
But just to walk out of there is a good time because it was pretty dicey there for a second. You talked about Tony Khan coming out, I think, in between Dynamite and Rampage is what you said. So just, you know, did he come out any other times? Anything of note that he said, or was it typical, hey, we love you, rah, rah, you guys are a great crowd, et cetera? You know, kind of give your highlights on that.
Yeah, so he came out three different times throughout the evening. But, yeah, it was definitely just a rah-rah. He came out right between Dark and Dynamite. The rah-rah, the crowd are going to be on the air here in 90 seconds. So great to be in Charleston, West Virginia. I love this city. It's the best wrestling city in the world. I mean, it was definitely, like, you know, rah-rah speech. And then he came out again right after Dynamite, between Rampage. Same thing, like, hey, audience, I need your energy for Rampage, you know, to be on Friday night. He told people, you know, if you're in a bad seat, move, you know, there's a few people who may be leaving. If you see an empty seat on the camera side, run over and fill it. And then,
oh, wow.
So then, you know, he made sure of that. And then he introduced the Acclaim, and they came out and did a rap, you know, for Charleston. And, and then after Rampage was over, he ran out again. There was a kid who was it was two different kids celebrating their birthdays that were near us. He came out and wanted to say hi to them, got pictures with them. Then, you know, since I was there, you know, he shook my hand and he like personally thanked me for showing up. So very, very, very Tony. We got some pictures together as well too. So yeah, he was very, very excited. And then he jumped in the ring and celebrated with, so something happened with Rampage. We'll talk about spoilers in a minute, but then he went to the ring and did things with people who were involved in Rampage matches.
Cool. And then my final question. Oh, go ahead. Wait.
No, I was going to throw you, Tyler. Yep.
Oh, yeah. So just final thing is just, you know, were you there in October of 2019? If so, any different experience? Was it a more polished experience or the same? And then if you were or weren't, you know, just the crowd type, was it, families, or was it mainly, adults without kids, et cetera? Just kind of your opinion on the demo, and then, yeah, your experience if you've been there before.
Yeah. I was there in 2019, but we had front row seats then too. So it was a very similar experience overall, except it wasn't as long because there was no Rampage then, and they only taped like two matches beforehand and like one match after, I believe. So for like, at the time, it was just one Dark, not two dark mm-hmm. elevation. I mean, you know, so it was definitely a different experience there. But crowd-wise, very, very, very diverse. There were a lot of families, a lot of kids all around us with their parents and such. So yeah. I mean, it was different. Like I flew out to Vegas for Double or Nothing. And was in the crowd there. So that was definitely like more like adults and, you know, people of, you know, my age group, 30s and 40s and such. Mm-hmm. Here in Charleston was definitely more like a family gathering.
Cool. Wade, any?
two other segments for Dynamite. I didn't get a sense the Gun Club Acclaimed angle got over huge, and that the Scissors line isn't as over as Anthony Bowens is that matches how hard Anthony Bowens is leaning into it. So I wanted to get your take on that moment. And number two, I want to get your thoughts on the Jungle Boy thing, but I'll introduce that in a second. So first, the Gun Club Acclaim thing.
Yeah. Like no one really cares about the Gun Club. Like, why are they beating up their dad? And then why would the Acclaim want Billy back? Like, it just looks, they just want to say scissor me daddy-o and hope that they think that's going to be the best thing ever, which, you know, the scissoring part, like people do it in the crowd and have like a moment of fun. But yeah, it's a little confusing why, you know, that's getting pushed so hard.
Talk about the crowd reaction for Jungle Boy. And if it stuck out to you, that he seemed to really get irritated by the what chance. Not they didn't gain a ton of steam, but that they were even there at all. And he kind of paused and just gave this death stare to a fan or group of fans who were whatting him. And just kind of what vibes or what sense you got about where Jungle Boy is as a character, at least with the live audience tonight?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he definitely gets a large pop when he comes out. Everyone, you know, loves his theme song. And then at the very beginning, I don't know, you could let me know, like, could you hear him very well? Because in the first, like, minute or minute and a half, he had the microphone holding by his chest. And,
yes, I mentioned that in my report. Yes. In my written report, I said, you know, Jungle Boy entered the ring and held the mic too far from him. And you could see, you could almost sense the director, like, going, like, it's like if I'm podcasting like this and the director's like, I got to turn the volume up and offset that. So, yeah, I don't know if it's just he can't be bothered or he's just so inexperienced or what. But, yeah, it's not often you see wrestlers just not know how far to hold the mic away from their mouth. That was
right.
But, I mean,
well,
he doesn't
I mean,
have a ton of experience.
Yeah, because Justin Roberts was crawling in front of the ring. So I guess they probably had a tight shot on Jungle Boy. He was holding up a mic to his face and was trying to get, like, desperately get his attention. Like, hold it up
That's
here.
Hilarious.
Hold it up here. So, like, it took, you know, I guess, like, a good minute before he finally did it. So he might have just, like, started getting annoyed overall that, you know, that he did that. But then, you know, my wife pointed out, I was like, that he probably hasn't had very many in-ring promos either. So, you know, like, yeah, it was a weird moment. And then, you know, like I, you know, Christian coming out and, you know, Christian actually got some support from the crowd. So, you know, it was a bit of a loud chuckle when he told Jungle Boy he'd been getting too personal, you know? So, but yeah, like he definitely turned because we were in the front row, like opposite of the hard cam. So like he definitely turned our direction for that like quick second. So he might have like yeah been just getting a little like confused by what was going on, but it just didn't seem like his best night.
Yeah. Well, so is there anything else from Dynamite that you want to mention? Then we'll kind of go into the spoiler zone of the segment here.
Well, yeah, just that, you know, the whole, you know, Mox and Punk thing when they came out later and brawled again, you know, like got a huge pop because no one wanted to see Tony Nese. You know, he'd already.
Poor Tony.
So like yes. that
he's good,
yeah.
But I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, you know, he wrestled on Dark. So we were like, really? He's the one guy that's going to wrestle twice? And so yeah, that was you know, that was awesome. But yeah, it was definitely you know, really cool, like really cool experience overall. Mox came by like right past us, you know, and was, you know, psyching himself up to you know, cross the barricade. But yeah, it was a really, really cool, really cool show.
Cool. So, yeah, go ahead with Tyler. If you want to plug your ears for a few minutes, you can. I don't know how you feel, but about spoilers, because you're covering it Friday night. But, Jason, yeah just give us some highlights from what happened for the Rampage tapings.
So Rampage, it opened up with Claudio and Yuta coming out, and Claudio issued an open challenge for the Ring of Honor title. Dustin Rhodes actually answered it, so apparently that's going to happen next week in Cleveland. And Ricky Steamboat came back out to be there for the interview, and Claudio said Ricky actually helped train him and gave him a shout-out, so, you know, that was a cool moment. And then just throughout the night, like, I'm not sure, did they show Kip Sabian very much on camera?
Not that I noticed.
Yeah, way too much.
Okay.
He's the guy with the... He's the guy with the
box on his
the box on his head every week.
I didn't even notice. I guess I'm wrapped up and typing up my report. So
well, yeah,
that's,
you've ruined. Yeah, so you've ruined this for Wade. I just want you to know that because now he's gonna see it all the time. It's gonna annoy him. At least it's just like me. So maybe that's just me coming out. I'm very annoyed by the gimmick. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Kip actually sat next to me during the whole show, so that was kind of cool. Yeah, so, like, that was cool. So, like, you know, he would take photos and then slow clap and give me fist bumps when he liked something. But at Rampage, his wife, Penelope Ford, faced off against Athena, and Athena beat her. But, you know, he was very torn, you know, was doing a lot of miming, you know, like, trying to, like, reach out for her and stuff. But then there was one moment where Athena crashed into her over by us and, like, smashed into like, me and Kip. And so, like, that was, like, a big thing. And then in the main event, it was the trios match, the Trust Busters that nobody cares about. And versus the Best Friends, you know, spoiler, Best Friends obviously go over. But there was a moment where they had to take out Parker Bordeaux. So they crashed him over the railing. He landed, like, on me. So hopefully that, you know, that'll be on TV, man. But, yeah, so that's how they took him out was, you know, so he's laying by my feet for, like, the last, like, several minutes of the match. So, you know, definitely, like, some fun perspectives from that. But, yeah, Best Friends, you know, obviously win. Nothing of too, you know, exciting happened overall other than Buddy Matthews won in a squash and Miro came out and beating down. So that was exciting for, you know, that got a huge pop for Miro, you know, coming out to a live audience and getting some action.
Cool. Anything else off camera or Dark or Rampage related you want to share, Jason, because we can't throw to you on specifics because we didn't see it.
Yeah, nothing of note happened during Dark. It was like 7 or 8 very short matches. Anna Jay won in 2 minutes, and Ortiz and Ruby Soho won in 2 minutes, and Julia Hart won a match in 2 minutes. It was just, you know, squash after squash after squash. Just, you know, nothing of note there. And then afterwards, you know, Tony Khan came out and they thanked everyone. And then during the main event, Danhausen, when it came to yeah, so that was the other big thing. When Parker Bordeaux had been crashed, you know, over the railing, obviously, you know, they eventually, you know, wanted to check on him. When it came to check on him, Danhausen was scrunched down behind, you know, by me and Parker, you know, told us to be, you know, be quiet or whatever. And then he popped up and, you know, cursed everybody. And then they, you know, they end up winning the match. But then afterwards, Best Friends, Danhausen and Tony Khan, you know, celebrated. They brought a kid over the railing and wished him happy birthday and stuff. But then on the microphone, you know, pumped everyone else up again. Thank you for being awesome. And then said they got to get the people what they want because, you know, he's the biggest Orange Cassidy fan. So then he jumps in the ring and he's the center guy while everybody else, like, you know, squishes him, you know, with a big hug. And then him and Danhausen went back and forth because it's Danhausen's birthday. And, you know, Danhausen said he was going to curse Tony Khan if he didn't give him, like, $10 and, you know, some comedy there. But then, you know, thanked everyone for a good night. And then they all came around the ring and took photos and signed things for people. And so it was pretty fun.
What was your impression of Tony Khan off camera, but interacting with the audience and just what's your impression of him?
So this was my wife's first experience with Tony. She didn't know much about Tony, the owner, and everything. And she was like, is that really the owner of AEW? Because, I mean, he's just a guy in a hoodie who's just bouncing around in front of it. Like, you know? So, but yeah, very genuine, very, like, you know, probably how I would have acted if I had $1 billion and was able to run a wrestling company, you know, like 20 years ago. You know, but he's just the biggest fan ever. Definitely comes off as a cornball, but you know, maybe, you know, that's probably a good thing, right? Because that's probably who he truly is.
Oh yeah, I don't think that's an act he's putting on. That is a slice of genuine Tony Khan, for sure. Cool, Jason. Thanks for your generous time here and relaying your experience at the live event tonight.
No, absolutely. Like, I was on your show when it was in Charleston back in 2019, so I appreciate you having me on again.
Awesome. Hope we can do it again. Let me know next time you attend a show.
Yes, sir.
Cool. All right. Wow, we're running along here, but I do want to just read through a few emails if you've got the time, Tyler.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, cool. First, Javier did chime in. He said, Private Party on June 13th on a Rampage taping lost to the Lucha Brothers. Their previous TV match before that was December 29th of last year. And that's, or I should say that's the last time they won. It was a they were on the winning side of a 10-man tag. So they haven't won this year on television. On January 19th, 2021, they won on Impact against Sabin and Storm. On September 5th, 2020, they won at All Out against Reynolds and Silver. Whoa. That's the last time they won, not on Dark or Elevation. And July 1st, 2020 was their last TV win against Ortiz and Santana. And they're getting a tag team title shot on Friday.
The thing there is just the improvement of the pay-per-view cards. If that was a pay-per-view match compared to like the 13 that we get and how stacked they are in comparison to a match like that, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, good point. Okay, so rolling through some calls here. Grant emailed back from Detroit. He said, I forgot to ask you, do you see them leaving Britt Baker off the pay-per-view, or are we going to get a four-way with her, Hayter, Thunder Rosa, and Toni Storm? Yeah, Britt Baker not prominent lately on Dynamite. And, you know, I mean, we're a couple weeks out from this pay-per-view, and if she's a pillar, if she's the top female star they have, it's kind of weird, Tyler. They're not finding a way to work her into TV more often, especially Dynamite.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't think she's going to be on the pay-per-view unless you have Athena and Jade, and you have, Tony and Thunder Rosa. So that seems like, you know, the max is two women's matches. So unless she's going to be tagging with Jamie on the pre-show, and that's where they break up, I don't really see even a need, but I think that is indicative of, her not being, put in the spot. You know, is she as valuable as everyone thinks she is? You know, I'm not trying to be negative, but yeah, that's hard when someone is healthy to not be on the show. You would not see that on the male side. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Julian said, Wade, you missed the second question about Brian. It seems like he's being phased out of the combat team. What's the next thing for him going forward? And what's his best role in AEW? If he's being phased out of the Blackpool Combat Club, do you get that sense that there's no Regal tonight? Or is it just, well, they just happen to not have some of the people there, so they just didn't draw attention to it?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think about it until it was asked, but I do think that's the way they're going. I mean, you saw Claudio and Wheeler come out, and they held back Jon Moxley on the second brawl. Now you can also say that Danielson just had a really long match. He's probably not going to come out there and do that. But as we heard about on Rampage, there was, members of Blackpool there and they did not include Danielson. So that seems to be the way they're going. I think that might have more to do, at least, this is me guessing, but Danielson definitely wants to be a gray character, not quite a good guy, and would probably more like to be a bad guy. So him going away from a Moxley, Claudio, Wheeler group makes sense to not have that group be bloated. Him and Garcia can do their own thing. So, I think there's been slight hints at it just on the production, but nothing given in storyline. So I wouldn't fully bet on it, but it seems like that is more plausible than not at this point.
Ed from High Desert, California says, good evening, Keller and Sage. First off, was Veer's opponent on Raw a family member of yours, Wade? Because his last name was Keller. No, not that I know of. Definitely a very good Dynamite. I think Moxley has a cool factor, has the it factor. It's a natural feel for him and with him. But the buffoonery from Moxley always kills me. He feels like the biggest rock star, then drops to a made-for-TV rock star character. He also feels juvenile at times. Okay. I really do have those two competing thoughts with Moxley when he comes out. In the segment with Punk, Moxley felt like a punk, a brat, a jerk-off, not someone I dislike as a heel, but I just want to go away. I just wish AEW Moxley himself, could pull back a little. Interesting, he sees that in Moxley a little bit different than Deke, who saw that more with Punk. I didn't think the Snow Angels, by the way, was a good look for Punk, not as a heel or a face, but just as a dignified adult human being, much less a cool pop star. I know what he's going for. It's just, I could, you know, we're talking about Scott Hall. I can imagine Scott Hall backstage watching the monitor going, oh God, you know, like what is, what's Phil doing? That's so dumb. Was there anything about Moxley, Tyler, that you, that seemed to stand out as juvenile or just kind of in general that he kind of has some cool factors, but then undoes it a little?
No, I mean, not really, but that's more my provocation for him as a character, right? I mean, I think he was very true to his character within AEW in this promo, maybe elevated a little bit based on the stakes of the situation. But I just think overall, you know, if people were negative on Punk or Moxley tonight, I do think that is, you know, you can always be more clean with everything that you do in life and in production with AEW specifically. But, you know, when you get non-sanitized screenplays that wrestlers read, which is more of the Vince McMahon era, so I have to be hypercritical of WWE right now. But, you know, if you get people just kind of going out there and being themselves, being their characters and kind of improvising out there, then this is like, there's good and there's bad. And I still prefer this over the sanitized version of it. So, but yeah, I think they're both true to their character. Less so CM Punk, if you had to make me choose. I think Moxley was more aligned with what I would expect from him. And yeah, I mean, Punk doing the Snow Angels, I think, is more indicative of a more heelish Punk. So yeah, that's been my thought throughout the night. So
he should be the face of wrestling today. He has that Stone Cold feel, but then he dives right off, at least for me. In the trios match, I guess there were no countouts. Never saw the ref count, even when the guys were out for days. Also, you didn't even need to tag in. Why don't they adjust the rules? If that's how they want it, great. Adjust the rules then, instead of just ignoring. Raw was very good. Dynamite was full of energy. I'm curious if any of that flows to SmackDown and Rampage. SmackDown is skippable to me, even the last 3 weeks. I don't feel that same energy Raw has had at all, and Rampage is well below skippable. Last week, I watched a full episode of SmackDown, the first since October, and I watched a full episode of Rampage, the first since CM Punk debuted. So hopefully heading into the fall with some changes, we'll see more energy on Fridays. Thanks for all the content. Always a great listen. Well, I liked SmackDown on Friday quite a bit. Didn't think it was like a great show, but I liked the format and getting the most out of what they did and the more indications of the changes that Paul Levesque is making and how he approaches things, something Brian Gewirtz talked about too. He said he's watching the product and likes what he's seen with Hunter and the loosening up of some of the language restrictions and that type of thing. So, yeah, but anyway, the main thing on AW there was the trios rules, Tyler.
Yeah, I mean, in my report, I've written that it felt very much like a, you know, 2019, early 2020, pre-pandemic opening match within AW where you'd have a six-man, a eight-man, a 10-man tag. That was just kind of all over the place, and there were no real rules when it came to countouts, tags, things like that. So that's the feel I got here. It's kind of like a throwback to AEW of yore. But, yeah, I mean, it is kind of what it is, especially when you get – I mean, I've always advocated, and I don't think it's a very popular opinion, if you're not going to do the rules and just make them all tornado tag matches, and maybe for the trios titles you could do that because they're probably not going to be around forever – and they're not as prestigious of title belts just based on what they are. And, you know, that might be something, but, you know, I think it just kind of is what it is. That's just built in for me mentally, and that's probably more of a negative on me in AEW that I don't really think about it anymore. But with the Kenny and the Young Bucks specifically, I think it's just something I build in, just like watching New Japan where they're on the outside for 2 minutes and the ref kind of makes it work. It's kind of the same thing. It's just kind of built in, and I don't like it, but it's just kind of what it is at this point.
If it's not going to change, it can drive you crazy to be a stickler about it. And if it's not ultimately, if it's more out of principle than really affecting anything, you know, you can point it out. And I think it's worth pointing out that some people just find it, it takes them out of the moment, you know, it disengages them from the suspension of disbelief when it feels so arbitrary. And I think that's a concern. That said, if they're going to do it and it's not it's probably not a deciding factor in somebody choosing to watch or not watch or buy a ticket. You know, you can make the point and move on. And I mean, they do it because they don't want to fight within the restrictions of following the rules. Cause they think the what they gain from being looser with the rules is greater than being strict. But I think they do that more than they should. All right. Zach and
me.
Oh, good. Yep.
Oh, it used to be way, way, way worse, and I think they've really tightened it up compared to, it used to be two or three matches a show that were like this tonight, and it felt out of the blue, and it felt like this is kind of not been around for a long time. So that's kind of why. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Cool. Yep. So Zach in Texas is up. He goes, Kenny Omega's back. Rejoice. Seriously, it's good. It's good to see the cleaner back in the ring. This show started hot and ended hot. CM Punk came out loaded for bear and just opened up the clip. That promo between him and Mox was great. The whole segment was fantastic. I'm genuinely curious to see what the plan is for the unification match next week and the match for All Out. By the way, Zach Haydorn, you know, tweeted, they better have, Tony better have a really good booking plan to make it worth giving that match away next week. Back to Zach. He goes, I'm sorry, Zach in Texas, not Zach Haydorn. This is too confusing. I shouldn't have done that. TK is unpredictable, and I like that. Something else I like, Toni Storm getting another title shot. She needs to go over Rosa on All Out. No excuses. Something I loved was the Danielson Garcia match. They look like they were trying to murder each other, and it appears that Brian beat the sports entertainment out of Garcia. The pitfall of the night was finding out FTR was going to be in a trios match at All Out, but I even understand that. FTR obviously going to win when they challenge, but TK doesn't want to take the title off Swerve and Lee yet. So this is the compromise. Such is life. I did think, by the way, Tyler, that Wardlow looked more comfortable with FTR, and it might be a good thing to have him linked with them on camera more often, because FTR really popular. Wardlow has a chance of being rejected by the fan base if, minus MJF, he's just not that entertaining, and he's sort of a one-note act and a little stiff on the mic. And FTR, you know, are pros, especially Dax. And so maybe he can, you know, develop a little bit more as a babyface without having MJF to just sort of play off silently. Because he's good with the facial expressions. You know, he has some good instincts. But the, you know, Wardlow's World thing just feels forced and, you know, very 1992 WWF. So I like that. I think it's a good move. And I have, you know, not everybody who can have a great match is going to be able to have a great match on every pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think it's a good call, too. I mean, you're putting really anyone in that spot that's going to get the rub from FTR is going to benefit. And someone like him who has proven he can get a good fan reaction and he's got a unique look and, you know, can offer something different to them in that group. He can be the enforcer when they need it. It all works pretty well. I think it, you know, limits him and what he can be at the upper echelon. You know, I don't think he's AEW world champion if you have to kind of do your singles run and then instantly get attached to FTR. Now I could be wrong about that, but you know, I think that's totally fine as well. Not everyone is going to be a top tier guy. So I think if he's a Miro type guy for a long time, I think that's a pretty good win for Tony Khan.
All right. JB from Detroit says, I really enjoyed the promo battle between Punk and Mox tonight, much the same way as I enjoyed KO and Drew on Monday night. I thought that there was a good intensity with both men and it felt genuine. There were meta moments to the promos, but given the long history between both men, I thought it worked here. Also, in kayfabe, I felt that the proper level of animosity for a brawl existed here because Punk is genuinely hurt he didn't get to have the summer of Punk he planned, and he feels like the success and attention Mox has gotten should be his. Two, regarding Wade's comment about new pillars being established a few weeks ago, I feel like AEW is following up adequately here, as hoped. Daniel Garcia got possibly his biggest moment in post-match reaction in AEW to this point with an epic 2-out-of-3 false match with Danielson and a strong angle with the will he or won't he to join BPCC and abandon the JAS. I think that is a fantastic way to score a strong face turn. Powerhouse Hobbs got a nice backstage moment to more firmly establish his modus and character. By the way, I really liked Hobbs on the mic tonight, Tyler. I thought that was his most sure-footed mic work to date.
Yeah, I agree. And he just has a gravitas about him leaving that sort of enforcer character and has a good explanation for everything that he's done so far. And
yeah.
I also like in a character that he's not a heel that is also going to take out other heels. Like he said, he's going to take out the Factory as well. Like if they
yeah.
failed him in their goal. So I think that really helps give him depth as opposed to like all bad guys stick together. I hurt good guys. You know, that is kind of what his character could be. And he gave it a little bit of depth just with that kind of that line there. So yeah, I agree with you.
And he's not just standing there, arms crossed, with that upper lip snarl that he leaned too heavy on. It feels like this is a genuine person with genuine facial reactions, know, which is, you know, was my criticism of him. I think Karrion Kross does cartoon face too much. Too many wrestlers do that. And Hobbs just came across as, oh, that's not a dude I want to mess with, and I think that's who he really is. And that's what you want to get across. And then, JB says, and Jungle Boy got to call for his match with Christian at All Out and got to beat down Christian. So among the new pillars were Garcia, Hobbs, Hook, and Ricky Starks a few weeks ago. I thought they had a show where those were kind of the four new pillars. Starks got a little video package, and Hook got – they hyped Hook with the video package too for Rampage. But and Hobbs talked about Starks. But not everybody's – you know, not everybody's going to be on TV every week. But – yeah, as far as the new pillars, Hobbs and Garcia, I thought had a good week.
Yeah, and I would say the only pushback I'd have on you on the pillars is a meta reason. I love Ricky Starks. I think he's got a lot of upside. But, you know, if Cody Rhodes has any sort of pull at WWE, I think Starks is a WWE guy on that next contract than anything. But that would be my only pushback. But I think he's super talented wherever he goes.
Well, if Tony Khan wants a bird in hand offer – and a vote of confidence for Ricky, he can make an offer and probably keep Ricky. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't think Starks, you know, he hasn't had that big money contract yet. And if Tony values him, not because WWE is going to sign him, but because he genuinely is going to push him, I don't want to pay him and hoarding him. I want Starks to have the best career he can have. But I don't think it's fait accompli that because of Cody, he's going to be in WWE. A lot of this depends on what Paul Levesque thinks of him, and if they're sending word to Ricky, play hardball, we got you covered. We got plenty of money to play with here. Yeah. And then JB says, my final question to you guys is, do you think that Mox Punk and Jungle Boy Christian should have put hands on each other before the pay-per-view, particularly on the same show? As always, love the show, and everyone go VIP. Thanks, JB. I think Mox Punk was a really good pull-apart. They were just relentless in trying to get at each other, and they had a swarm of security keeping them apart. So I got wrapped up in that. I didn't feel like anybody was backing away. And so I like that. Christian Jungle Boy, you could go either way on that, but I get JB's point. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, on the Mox Punk thing, obviously they're going to wrestle next week, so that changes any sort of a disagreement you might have about that. But yeah, I mean, the Jungle Boy Christian thing has drawn out a little too long for me. So they needed to kind of ramp it back up to try and get to that fever pitch. They probably need one more thing, not next week, but the go home show on to really spice things up. Maybe that's a stipulation or something, you know, what is Luchasaurus doing because he's suspended this week. So there's still that story to tell. So yeah, I think it's a good interlude before you get to the final act before the pay-per-view. So yeah, I was fine with both.
All right, we'll do two more emails to wrap up here. Kyle from Tinley Park, Illinois said, wow, what a great match between Garcia and Danielson. Garcia's a star. He has believable heel tendencies as well, which a lot of their stars don't have. I really believe that Garcia's a little punk that thinks he's the best. Well, he's going to be going babyface, so that's not good. Can't say enough good stuff. Well, maybe. Maybe not. I could be wrong. If he aligns with Jericho after teasing being with Brian, that's good. I just don't know where they go with Garcia Danielson next. Like, I feel like we saw the peak. He adds, I can't say enough good things about him and the match. He is the future. By the way, you know, Garcia does not have an impressive winning record in high-profile matches. They did on the graphic say he's 8-3 in his past 11 matches, which, by the way, means he's 8-4 in his past 12, just going to say. And his overall AEW record they listed at, or maybe it's just for the year, is 26-18. I'm glad they did that. And I think their, you know, win-loss records are legit tallies. But I do think if you don't put that stat on the screen, most people are thinking Garcia loses a lot and doesn't have big signature wins that make me think he should be going toe-to-toe with Danielson, which is, you know, it's not the end of the world. And he held his own against Danielson and gained credibility even, in that context. So it's not like a big deal, but it felt going into this show kind of brave to dedicate that much TV time in making this one of the featured matches when Garcia just isn't portrayed as a top guy.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it like Wheeler Yuta a little bit. I mean, it's the same sort of trajectory, right? I mean, he had that big match with Moxley, and before that he was the jobber guy. He was the fourth guy in Best Friends. And, you know, you got to have people lose, and you got to transition them at some point. So when we get to 2023 – in his yearly record resets, and he's, you know, this time next year, he's, you know, 25-6 or something. Right. And he's elevated as a upper mid card guy. It all works out. So again, the keeping the records can be beneficial when they need to be. But as I was looking today, when I was looking up the rankings, I was looking through everyone on the roster, and everyone on the roster has a winning record, even like Serpentico. So they always just, you know, so it's all kind of convoluted and pointless. So I don't read too much into it personally.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Up next, let's see who do we hear it all. All right. We'll go to Chris Fielder. He says, holy shit, is Punk going heel or just the most truthful guy in wrestling at the moment? Business has definitely picked up. Epic promo. I tell you, we probably covered this, but do you think that was meant to be heel, or do you think that was meant to be just there's a term I'm looking for, a truth teller. I can't think of the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. I read it as you got to, at least for this match, you always have to have, you know, even if you have two good guys, you're going to have some percentage of someone is going to be a little bit more of a heel than the other one. And I felt watching this that it might not be a full heel turn, but it is at least Punk is going to be get 49% of the crowd cheering for him while Moxley gets 51%. Not that exact percentage breakdown, but that's what I think they're going for. And that's the easier story to tell with Punk coming out of nowhere, you know, not coming out of nowhere, but just coming back. And some audience might think he doesn't deserve to have kept his title this whole time, et cetera. It's just an easier lift than making Moxley the indignant guy who's kind of changing his whole character we've seen the last 2 months to fit that need. So I got more of that vibe. And depending on what the story is, if they're going to wrestle twice, if there's someone else at All Out for Punk to wrestle, then it's a little bit more open to tell that story. But without knowing the destination, it's hard to fully assume what's happening for me.
Yeah. All right. We'll wrap up here. Kyle from Tinley Park, Illinois. I already read the beginning of his email. I just didn't finish. Sorry, Kyle. If he's listening, he's like panicking. Hey, what about the rest of my email? His match also, so this is the finishing up Kyle's email, which was before the last one I read. His match also got me thinking, do you ever remember a 2 out of 3 fall match where one wrestler won the first 2 falls? It seems like everyone that I've seen goes the whole 3 falls thing. Thanks for your coverage over great sport. I'm enjoying the Factor meals and your wonderful podcast throughout the week. Have a good night. VIP members don't get to hear me talk about Factor meals because they're a live read and we edit out ads for VIP members. But I got back from a working vacation Sunday night and I was in the car for like 5 hours and I got home and I was like, oh, I got Factor meals waiting for me. And I did. And I was hungry, had dinner with a Factor meal. And then I had 3 of them on the next day because I just was, you know, unpacking and discombobulated and catching up on work. It was so nice having like just good, healthy, fuel generating meals that were like really high quality ingredients, 3-minute microwave, and boom, they were ready. So yes, I'm plugging them, but it's a genuine endorsement. I really do use a product. Go.factor75.com/Wade120 and enter code Wade120 to get $120 off. I do recommend them. I get the vegan options, but they have all kinds of, you know, keto options and regular meal options and stuff. And we're getting good feedback on that meal service. And I just got another delivery today. So anyway, I snuck that in. Go.factor75.com/Wade120, coupon code Wade120. So as far as the 2 out of 3 falls, I mean, the vast majority, Tyler, are, you know, they want to go the full 3. I think it's sort of considered a burial if somebody gets, you know, loses 2 straight falls. I think it should be done more often, but it's so hard to justify a 2 out of 3 falls match, unless it's two wrestlers facing each other, who fans think are you know somewhat evenly matched, and if they're not, you're like in the Garcia situation, you're trying to tell a story. We're not trying to bury him, but you don't want to bury Danielson either. So the odds of doing a 2 out of 3 falls match where you're willing to have one guy lose 2 straight falls, that's just going to be infrequent. It's going to be rare. And until they do it more often, it will have a stigma to it. It will feel like a burial. Now, if they do 2 out of 3 fall matches more often and sprinkle in losing 2 straight falls more often, it won't be a stigma. It'll just be another way matches end. That's my take on that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. There's a reason for it, right? That's why it's been a tried and true thing to not do that. It's kind of like the finishing a match during the commercial break. It's happened, I think, once in AEW history. So it's happened, you know, that's probably the amount of times, you know, two falls in a row have happened. I think the only really good story you could tell is if someone was doing a fall from grace or a fall from the top storyline where they kind of go down to the, they keep losing and losing and losing. And if they're a good guy and that makes them turn to a bad guy or vice versa, because they have, you know, lost a lot and they need to change their ways. That's like a good way, good time to do it. But besides that, yeah, there's really no good way to do it without, you know, destroying that character.
Tyler, tell people how they can hear more from you, see more from you, follow you on social media.
Yeah, thank you. You can follow me at Ring of Tyler on Twitter, and you can read my reports every Wednesday opposite of yours about AEW Dynamite, do the alternative report. If you're a VIP member, and you should be, you can listen to me do a recap of AEW Rampage every Friday night. I usually post late Friday night, early Saturday morning. So if you think it is very skippable, like some emailers and callers have said tonight, then it's a good 25-30 minute recap of the show where you get my opinion built in. So please give that a listen. And then, as you said at the top of the show, Wade, please check out the PW Torch YouTube channel. And so youtube.com/PW Torch. And you can see Zach Haydorn and myself. And we're adding people in as we go here, but doing our weekly show called Fireside Chat, where we talk about the latest news and the biggest stories in wrestling, and do some daily news hits, as well as some AMAs. And then for major shows, we're watching those live. So you can join us there, get our live feedback of the matches as they're happening, ask your questions, all that good stuff. So we're all there. And also, I have a ticket for Dynamite next week. So I will try and give you a call and give you my live opinion of the show. So,
although you might be able to get, you know, retire early if you sell your ticket. I mean,
we'll see. I'll let you know if I'm doing the report. If I'm doing the report Wednesday, you know, I made some made a good decision. So.
Yes, sounds good. Tyler, thanks so much. Always a pleasure having you on.
Yep.
Yep. And thanks to our callers, our emailers, our on-site correspondent Javier for calling in for the roundtable segment, and of course all the listeners. We will talk to you next time.